Mike, are we good?
All right. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. The public hearing on the transfer of funds from the O&M Fund to Capital Projects Fund is called to order. Mrs. Moak, can you call the roll?
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Wachinski?
Here.
Mr. Buckles?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Elder?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. The purpose of tonight's hearing is to consider the authorization of a permanent interfund transfer in the amount of $1,652,278 from the Operations and Maintenance, or O&M Fund, to the Capital Projects Fund, such transfer to be effective March 8, 2016. Notice of tonight's public hearing was published on February 25th in the Glen Ellyn News, doing business as Suburban Life Media. To date, district officials have not yet received any comment or testimony. The board will take action on the matter during the regular board meeting that follows this hearing. Is there anyone present who would like to provide public comment on the transfer of funds? Anybody? All right. Okay. Well, thank you. Hearing none, may I have a motion to adjourn the public hearing?
Motion.
All in favor say aye. Oh, I'm sorry. Joe?
Second.
All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Okay. The hearing is now closed. Thank you very much. All right.
No, it is immediately following.
Right. Okay. Well, welcome, everybody. As the agenda noted, following the hearing, we would start the board meeting, so we are. So I call to order the March 7th, 2016 regular meeting. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, just a reminder for board members as well as the public, we live stream our meetings, and so welcome to all of you who are watching via our live stream. We have microphones here on the table, so again, for those of us at the board table, to remember to speak up. Mrs. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Elder?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Buckles?
Here.
Mr. Wachinski?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. All right, superintendent reports.
So we had a number of activities last week. It was a crazy busy week. But Saturday was a great opportunity to honor one of our teachers. And I'm honored to announce that the Benjamin Franklin fourth grade STEAM teacher, Wayne Wittenberg, has been selected at the Glen Ellyn Chamber of Commerce Educator of the Year for District 41. Wayne is very deserving of this recognition. And it's especially fitting that he is retiring at the end of this year. After 35 years of teaching, 29 years in District 41, and all at Benjamin Franklin. Anybody who knows Wayne, he is an incredible educator. Somebody who has given his life to our kids in District 41, but he also does so many things outside of District 41, making huge contributions to education way beyond D41. He does consulting around science and inquiry throughout the United States. Saturday, during the Glen Ellyn Chamber Awards, where they highlight and talk, you know, have an opportunity to recognize Teacher of the Year for District 41, District 89 and District 87, along with the Police Officer of the Year, the Firefighter of the Year, the Volunteer of the Year, Citizen of the Year. It is this wonderful gathering of people, and it's a celebration. But I was really just touched and honored to be there in support of Wayne and his family. He has a beautiful family, all of them. We're just great to get to know a little bit on Saturday. So Wayne will be here next board meeting, where Kirk Samples and Wayne will have an opportunity. Kirk will have an opportunity to introduce Wayne, and then Wayne will be able to have an opportunity to speak with the board like we've done in the past. So what a great Saturday it was, and couldn't have selected a better person for that recognition this year. Also at the D41 Reflections, I know many people have had their students participate in the Reflections in years past. This is an opportunity to honor our elementary artists throughout the district. This year's theme was let your imagination fly, and they absolutely did. The pieces of artwork there were incredible, very thoughtful, just wonderful artists throughout our district. So this was an opportunity to honor those silver, those district winners, and then those state-level students who were moving on. So that was great. Also want to recognize Catherine Lemon, the PTA president for Hadley, for her work and her commitment to the Reflections program. Without PTA leaders, this program would not exist. So this is a huge kudos to PTA for this year and the many years previous to that, because this has been a nice piece of celebration that occurs on an annual basis and allows our kids to shine in different ways. So it was just really nice. And then what would our district be without the annual Spellapalooza?
Explain what that is.
If you have not been to Spellapalooza, it is quite the event. From the chief of police, who, if you've never seen him MC an event, that in itself is worth admission. But this is an opportunity for the Glen Ellen Children's Resource Center to put on their fundraiser, one of their largest fundraisers of the year. They had 17 teams enter the competition. So as a team, unlike normal spelling contests where it's individual, this is about a group. So four people enter as a team, and they are given words. And they, as a team, try to spell the words correctly. But a neat little piece, and again, it's a fundraiser, is if you make a mistake, you have an opportunity to buy a pass to get you into the next round. So again, remember, it's about a fundraiser as well. But you only get one of those passes. You can't keep doing it all night long. But it's just a really great opportunity, again, for the community, because it wasn't just our schools, even though each of our schools was represented, and the Hadley was represented by a kid team and a teacher team. So that was always fun. But this year, and I've been told this is pretty rare, that the student team, who ended up coming in second, but they moved all the way into the finals against an adult team. Mm-hmm. So that was a big deal for our Abraham Lincoln students. So our Abraham Lincoln students are going to be here next week at the next board meeting as well. So board members, get ready to spell. We may have a little competition going on. And these kids were fantastic. The words that they were spelling, I was a judge, and thankfully I wasn't out there having to spell it. I was just ensuring that they were spelling them correctly. It was impressive, the words that they were given across the board. But more importantly, it was just an opportunity for the community to come together, celebrate the Glen Ellen Children's Resource Center, the work that they do, and continuing to raise funds for such a wonderful group. So really excited about that. But we were going to have them here on March 21st. I'm sending out an invitation tomorrow to them, but I talked to them on Friday evening. So it really was an incredibly busy week last week. I want to finish my report with a multi-age conversation. So after much consideration and evaluation of our multi-age structure at Level 3, I'm informing our parent community that District 41 will discontinue the use of the multi-age structure at Level 3 and will not be implementing it in Level 2 next year or in the foreseeable future. I did not take this decision lightly. I know a large number of stakeholders put an incredible amount of time and effort into ensuring that this structure was a successful structure. However, I reached my conclusion after reflecting on number of years of academic data, survey results, the previous survey results in 2014, this survey results from parents and staff, having conversations with level 2 and level 3 teachers over the past 2 years, in multiple discussions with principals and cabinet members. Although there's evidence of many social-emotional benefits and strong fifth-grade literacy data these last 2 years, there is limited support to expand it to level 2. By not expanding it to level 2, it's not in the best interest for the district to have multi-age level 3 structure continue in isolation. Therefore, we'll discontinue the multi-age structure at level 3 and will not expand it to level 2. The district will also return to traditional grade level identification, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. Like multi-age, looping offers many benefits for students and teachers. However, we're not going to be intentionally looping entire classes of students with the same teachers 2 years in a row. With these decisions, District 41 can focus on the future. We can continue moving forward. I recognize the incredible challenges we all face in education, but I also see the opportunities and all the possibilities that await our students, staff, and community. We're going to continue to emphasize the D41 model and foster the structure of content specialization. We'll continue the incredible opportunities we give our students, such as foreign language and problem-based learning. I'm really proud of our district and the moves that we've made. I think this is an important step as we go forward in District 41. So that's my news tonight. And I will be sending out a letter to the parent community first thing in the morning. So parents aren't watching, or if you're not in this room, the entire community will hear about it first thing tomorrow morning. Okay?
Thank you. Okay, next item, our board reports. Do we have any board reports from members tonight? Joe, you want to do a quick report?
We did the finance committee. Started at 5:30 today. We went over several topics. Mike presented a tech budget for the refresh program. He sent them to get some more data for us. There's the broad discussion, philosophical discussion, in a one-to-one for K through 2 level, and actually asked to look to go K through 3 in our discussion there. So Mike's going to give us some numbers, what it would look like for more of a one device for 2 students, and look at the budgetary benefit for that, and also get some feedback from our teachers. Another topic that we discussed at great length was the FTEs for ESL. Lori did a very detailed presentation, and we're all much, much more knowledgeable about the title programs that are involved in that and the federal funds. One other project that we'll be doing later in this, is the capital projects. We will have that as an action item, and Dave did a good job of presenting that and giving us the detail behind the bids that have come back for several of the capital projects that we had approved at a previous meeting.
Great. Good.
Oh,
Dan?
I actually didn't have a board report, but we jumped to board reports. And before, I wanted to ask, I had a couple of questions for Paul about the multi-age, but I didn't want to interrupt Joe's board report. So
okay.
I was wondering if I could just ask that.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask, you answered it. You said there's not going to be any, no levels anymore. Will be grade level, same thing. Is there any more changes? The expected, will it impact the schedule, the AD schedule? Will it impact how we, will it change the way we implement class? But will there be any changes in those regards for next year?
So we'll be working with some educators, administrators in the coming weeks. So we'll look through all those pieces. What does multi-age mean for the AD? What does it mean for all these different pieces? And I'll be able to report back to you in coming weeks. It has the potential to.
Okay. And I guess whatever we end up doing, I think we need to make sure that we explicitly communicate to parents what we expect the school year to look like for next year. And then another thing, I know we changed our class size targets for second grade when we were moving towards multi-age. So I think we just talked about if we ever do the multi-age, we might want to reevaluate that, and I don't know if that changes.
Lori and I spoke about that.
Or anything looks like, but
yeah, so we did discuss that at a board meeting probably a month or so ago. It's been a while. But Lori and I will touch base. We haven't seen each other much in the last week and a half. But we'll touch base on that, and then we'll also bring that to the board, that recommendation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And last thing, I just want to personally say that I applaud you for making this decision about the multi-agent looping. I'm listening to the teachers, I think, in making the decision. I know it couldn't have been an easy decision, especially when, you know, there's a lot of people within our administration, and I think even on the board that felt we needed to keep moving forward. I know last spring when you delayed it for another year, there was feedback of we need to just move forward, even if we don't need even to have data, we need to keep moving forward with the plan. So I want to recognize that you're making that step. And I'm just curious, I think that wondering what lessons learned or we're taking away from this since we implemented an initiative and we're changing direction after 3 years, which I think, you know, part of the feedback that we heard when we were going down the road of all these changes was that we tend to implement things and then abandon them after a couple of years. So are we taking any lessons learned away from this to hopefully maybe change course for how we do things in the future, do you think?
You know, there's always opportunities to learn in everything we do. And how do we do our work, and how do we continue moving forward? I think it's just that continuous opportunities to have conversations with staff, parents, everything that we did, you know, really engaging individuals from our parents to our teachers to board members on these issues and continuing to have the conversations, that's critical. It just is. We've got to keep having conversations. Hopefully I've demonstrated that I'm a reflective leader who takes in the information and is able to make the right decisions for our district based off of all this feedback. Yeah, I believe there are always learning for me and for everyone else in the organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that the feedback, I know, it seemed like from day one, especially from the younger elementary school teachers, was concerned with the multi-age for those younger grades.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, and this isn't necessarily reflecting on you because it was put in place with the prior administration, but we seem to take this tone of convincing people why we should do something maybe versus fully evaluating it. So hoping we can walk away from that, because I do wonder how much money and time we've spent on this the past couple of years with, you know, training teachers and having substitutes and, you know, using institute days to train for multi-age. And I think the last thing I kind of wonder in all of this is, you know, what this will mean for specialization in our district, because I think, you know, all the pieces of the puzzle were supposed to be implemented together. So I hope that's something that we're still evaluating. I know that from looking at the survey, the teachers, you know, they like specializing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I did see some comments even from staff that said for younger elementary students, they, even though they liked it, they didn't know if it was best for the younger elementary school students. And I think a lot of parents felt that way too. So you know, since we're not doing all the pieces of the puzzle, I hope we truly continue to evaluate that and the benefits of specialization for the teachers versus, you know, for the younger elementary school students being able to have one teacher and develop that relationship and have somebody be accountable.
Thank you.
Paul, I wanted to commend you as well. I agree with what Steph said. I won't go through it all, but I couldn't agree more that the conversations are so important. And again, this is not a reflection of you. This happened all before you. But, you know, we have looping is gone, wind time is gone, multi-age is gone, cornerstones of the think tank project are gone. And I just want to make sure that as we move forward as a board, that we have and we vet these things ahead of time rather than implementing things and then having to worry about the conversations and the problems that occur after it. So I want to make sure as we move forward with initiatives that we have a more thoughtful process as we do that. And we make sure that you're not going to be able to see everything that's going to occur down the road, but that we vet as much as we can down the road so that we don't put our community through these kinds of things. Behind it, we look at what they're saying to us, we take in the concerns, and then we vet it properly and make a good decision as best you can. Going forward. So, but I commend you for, I know it's a tough decision.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah, just say one last. Your microphone's covered down there a little bit. Thank you.
They don't want to hear about that.
Thank you. Thanks for picking that up.
Yeah, but before you speak, because I know you usually speak the last.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kind of the same to Kurt and Stephanie, but I don't agree with this decision. It is something that I thought was a good decision. I thought the governance and the teachers and the leaders that were taking the strides to move this district in a direction that I thought was vetted out thoroughly. Nothing's ever 100%. But I value the administration and the teachers and the principals and you, Paul, flushing this out and making decisions for the district. I'm not against changing multi-days, but I respect the decision of the administration, the teachers, and the staff, and you, and that's the direction we want to take. But I want to call out those leaders and those champions that did go through the think tank process and did take the step forward in being those pioneers and being those thought leaders to drive some of these things forward. It was a bumpy road, but I think it was a road that would have got smoother in the future. But personally, I disagree with the decision, but I respect the direction that we're taking the school.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Yep.
And maybe if I could, since we're going to go ahead and weigh in on this, without regard to your decision on it, I appreciate the process you've gone through since you've been here. Mm-hmm. Because right off, you came to us and you said, I want to go out to the teachers. I want to find out what they have to say about it. Then you held off last year because you said, I don't think the organization's ready yet. And now after another year of reflection and spending time talking to your staff, you're coming back and saying, this is what's going to be best for the district. Mm-hmm. And I truly respect that process. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I'll add a quick comment today. Can't articulate it better than Dean just did, but I think I do commend you often for your decision, but more so how you went about it. And Dean just described it. I think getting the feedback of everyone is important, and especially the teachers. And you did just that, not just once, but you continued to do it. And I think that ought to be commended just as much as the decision that was itself. So I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, John. Well, I guess I'll just round out the comment by saying I pick up on what Patrick said, and that the group of 60 teachers, parents, administrators, staff members that were involved in that innovation work that was initiated by the board at that time said, go and look at this 21st century learning practices, what needs to be done, how should we be thinking about this. It was a time when Common Core was starting. So in reflection, there's a lot to look back on. I'll pick up on something that Kurt said, which I think is true. You can't see. No one has a crystal ball to look down the road. You do, as you always will in education, continuous learning, so you do the best work that you can. And then, the pause on 2-3, which was your decision coming in, was supported by the board. And then this decision now, giving that extra year to really look at it and see upon reflection, is again to be commended. But any in business, we recognize any kind of execution of a plan when it hits real time in real life is often different, and I think that's what Kurt was trying to say, is that you can't always see it down the road, but I applaud the work that was done, and certainly we're going to continue to move forward as a district and look for opportunities. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I also want to mention that Paul also spent time in each of the buildings with Mrs. Carlson, our Assistant Superintendent for Teaching, Learning, and Accountability, last week to meet directly with the teachers who would be affected by this, so that there was one-to-one conversations, which, again, I think is always your way and important to do. So thanks. All right.
Okay, I had one board report. I don't know if
you want to go
right ahead. Yeah, that's right. Rebecca.
Yep.
I have to look it up because I think they changed their name, but I went to Special Ed Parents Advisory Council mm-hmm. last week. They had a topic that, ironically, I'm very familiar with, which was anxiety. So they had about 30 parents in attendance, and they picked that because they wanted to broaden what they usually do. Usually it's kind of a narrow focus, and they thought it would open up to more parents within the district than it did. There were a lot of questions that were asked. They had a presenter there who had a lot of information that she was able to provide. So it was well attended, well presented, good questions asked. And I walked away thinking that our focus really with our kids always has to be how we're impacting them, you know, and the changes we make, the things that we do to make sure that we're making sure that kids as they're moving forward are being taken care of, because that's it doesn't matter what any of us think as long as we're making sure that they are that they're getting what they need, that they're feeling comfortable in school, mm-hmm. And all that. So it was a good meeting.
It
sounds like it.
Anybody else? And a couple of put forward reports. I'm sorry, Dan.
That's okay. I just and you were there as well. Mm-hmm. We were both at the community awards celebration on Saturday
morning. Yep.
Where we already talked about Wayne, and then today I was at the PTA council meeting earlier today in this room, and tremendous group of people. A lot of topics to cover. I couldn't stay for all of it, because we were partially responsible for making it go over the agenda time. But we had a very good conversation about CIT and how that's being used, and it was a really good conversation, and also might have pointed out that we need to do a better job of communicating the types of things that are going on at school level for the community.
Yeah. And Brian Bonkowski was there to talk about that. Yeah, thank you. One other award I want to mention, because it's our kind of a partner district to us, but District 89, Glen Ellyn District Community Unit, School District 89, Dr. John Perdue, who is retiring this year, has been with them 9 years?
11 years.
11 years. Received the Distinguished Service Award, and he had no idea it was coming. He was completely flabbergasted by it, which was lovely. And their vice president for their board, Beth Snow, presented it to him. So that was a really nice tribute to John, who's been a wonderful partner to District 41. And myself as well on LEND as a part of the executive committee. So that was just a really nice kudo to him. So I mentioned that. So a board report for me is actually about LEND. LEND is the Legislative Education Network of DuPage, and it's a group of districts all throughout DuPage County that come together in to educate ourselves and also educate legislators around what's going on in our districts. This was a really interesting meeting. It was on February 26th, and it was held at Marquardt, which is just down the road at their facility. We had 9 local and state legislators, senators and representatives who were there, including Senator Tom Cullerton, who's been very involved in the education funding reform, along with Chris Nybo, who's our local senator, and then Deb Conroy, who's a representative. And the intention of the meeting was to let district leaders, superintendents, assistant superintendents for business, and even board members present information about what's going on in our district so we could be educating state legislators around that, especially around these different scenarios that are out there that our assistant superintendent, interim superintendent, Becky Allard, had put together for us a few meetings ago to look at our scenarios on pension reform, education funding reform, special education dollars being moved out and into general student aid. So all these different kind of funding scenarios. And I think that Paul was there as well, and also Cheryl Whittem, who will be our, as of May 1st, our assistant superintendent for finance and facilities. She was also able to attend, so I had a chance to sit with her. Quick takeaway is that the consensus among administrators and board members from DuPage is that legislators need to be educated in an ongoing way about the impact on individual districts. There is in DuPage County, I think, a naivete, maybe some ignorance and not intentional, but around what our district looks like and our districts in DuPage in terms of our population changing in many ways a great way, but this lack of understanding about the differences that causes in terms of funding. So the takeaway is that as they left the room, you know, board members, community members, and I know we've talked about this, you know, we need to reach out and create that heightened awareness of it. So a very good meeting. Encourage us to keep on top of that, which we will. I did not attend the Ben Franklin PTA meeting because I was out of town and there was no other board member who could take it, but I did send a board report to Katie Prescott, the president, and I saw her today and they had a very good meeting, so we'll report back on that. And one other thing from actually a couple of maybe 3 meetings ago that didn't follow up on was, but there was a request from a community member about reimbursements for teachers' supplies and the policy around that. And so that was reported back to the community member through Dr. Gordon and also our finance professionals, employees. So I just want to say that that the loop got closed on that, so I thank them for doing that as well. All right, no other board reports? Okay. Public participation. Pardon me, you do get colds from high school students still. I know we think you only get it from your elementary children, but I have a 17-year-old, and I definitely caught his cold. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form. Again, they're on the table when you come in, and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask, in the interest of time, that you forego making them, and then you provide the board with any comments of written material that you may have. And as an aside, any written material we welcome, because it always helps us to see that information in writing. Personal complaints, criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should always be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, any profanity, interruption, or other interference with the orderly conduct of this business meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response as a response is warranted. And I want to mention, I did receive a request from Ms. Qureshi, who will be speaking tonight, to have an additional amount of time, and so I've offered an additional minute to that, and she also was kind enough to bring a handout to all of us board members with the information that she'll be presenting on that as well. So thank you for coming. All right, Mrs. Moak, is there anyone present to address the board?
Ms. Qureshi.
Great, welcome. And what we do is have you speak at the podium. And then it allows, on some level, folks to be able to see you live stream. And the microphones are, again, on the table, so if you can project a little bit, that would be great. They're up here. Yeah.
Okay. There you
go. Yep. It should pick it up. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Hello. My name is Sonia Qureshi. This is my husband, Shireen. My address is Judy. And that's our daughter, Hiba. She's 10 years old. She's currently in fifth grade at Churchill. This is the first year that Hiba has been fully included with her typical peers and the first year that she's been allowed to attend her home school. Prior to this, Hiba spent 4 years out of district and 1 year at Ben Franklin in various self-contained classrooms. She was only brought back to District 41 in August 2014 as a result of a mediation agreement between us and the district. However, we learned that she was not being taken to the gen ed classrooms for the first few weeks of school. When she finally started to go to gen ed for literacy and science, we discovered the curriculum was not being modified appropriately. At our IEP meeting in March 2015, HIPAA's team decided to keep her at Ben Franklin in the self-contained setting for the following school year as well. We contested this placement and were able to get the district to overturn their decision, but only after creating a change.org petition, hiring an expensive advocate, and taking part in a due process resolution meeting. Hiba was finally granted enrollment at Churchill this year, and we were ensured she would be fully included with her gen ed peers in fifth grade. The year started off well, but we soon noticed Hiba was often receiving different work than her peers. When she did receive gen ed assignments, they were again not being modified appropriately, leading to frustration and behavior issues with Hiba. The district behavior specialist was called but not able to provide effective strategies to the staff. In December 2015, an outside behavior analyst came in to perform an independent education evaluation at our request. She observed Hiba in her classrooms and concluded that the behavior issues could be as a result of curriculum not being modified. She offered to personally modify the curriculum for the next 4 weeks to see if that helped diminish negative behaviors. The special education director, Ms. Gallo, declined her offer and stated that she would be placing Hiba back into a self-contained classroom next year at Hadley. Hiba would be in a class with just 3 other students. We cannot understand how the team can justify this drastic change in placement, especially since they have not exhausted all other resources first, such as the assistance of a board-certified behavior analyst who can provide support to Hiba and the new team at Hadley. Hiba has reached all her academic goals this year while being fully included, so we know this setting is appropriate for her and she can succeed, provided she is given proper support. We strongly believe in inclusion and have found several inclusion specialists over the past 2 years to help the district properly implement inclusion for HIPAA. However, the district has consistently denied any outside help. Most recently, the team was offered a free Skype session by a professor from New Hampshire who specializes in inclusion. Ms. Gallo declined her offer as well. IDEA ensures that all children with disabilities are entitled to a free and appropriate public education in the least restrictive setting. HIPAA's education has been anything but free and appropriate.
1 minute.
Due to the district's multiple refusals following to follow IDEA, our family has spent thousands of dollars over the past 2 years hiring advocates. All parents want their children to succeed in school, and we are no exception. We want to enable HIPAA to reach her highest academic potential, graduate high school, go to college, gain meaningful employment, and become an active, productive member of society. The parents of HIPAA's current classmates have reached out to share with us the positive impact HIPAA has had on their children this year. Due to time constraints, I won't be able to read them all out to you, but you have them in our written statement. We implore the board to assist us in keeping HIPAA included with her peers next year at Hadley with appropriate support so she can continue to succeed.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Paul, are we gonna get a little bit, I guess we probably talked about this, but sometimes we follow up, sometimes we don't use it, but we'll make sure we follow
up.
Absolutely. Michelle Gallo.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right, public participation? Yes. Thank you, Judy. Good evening.
My name is Judy Ruffalo, and I'm the advocate for Mr. and Mrs. Qureshi. And I'd like to thank you for giving me a couple minutes just to speak tonight.
Sure.
My role as an advocate isn't really to make recommendations about what children need or what's right or what's wrong. They have parents to do that for them. And as far as what's right or what's wrong educationally, they have an educational team that the parents are part of to make those kind of decisions. So really my role is just to help parents to understand what their rights are and to help them navigate what are frequently very murky, very confusing waters to go through. The laws that protect parents as equal members of the IEP team are clear. I know that you guys all know that. But the predetermination of an IEP outcome crosses the legal line. And, you know, just to talk about predetermination and what it is, the courts have ruled it's when an educational agency makes a determination prior to the IEP meeting, including presenting only one placement option for any given student with an IEP, and is unwilling to consider any other alternatives or to place any other options on the table. But sadly, this is what has happened in this situation. There's a recommendation that HIPAA be placed in a self-contained classroom for more than 80% of her day, allowing her out only for lunch and PE. So I just would like everyone to think about that, if that were their child. Allowed out of a room only for lunch and PE. The decision wasn't open for discussion. Parents had no input, and the decision was made before we walked in the room. Furthermore, not only was it the only option out there, but it violates least restrictive environment, giving HIPAA access to her general education peers. I just want to ask the board to consider the ramifications of unilateral decisions like this and ask them to examine a culture that shuts down parent input and compliance with procedural safeguards, such as prior written notice, which has been requested and unreceived.
30 seconds.
And finally, I would ask that you consider the thousands of dollars this family has spent, the way they've had to live in order to fight for what they believe is right for their child. And, you know, she's a little girl who wants to go to school with her friends, who, unlike her typical peers, needs significant supports to be able to do that, because sometimes life isn't fair. And so I would just like to request that this board be fair, think of this family, and consider what's ethical in protecting their life. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Mrs. Milk?
Bruce Curry.
Good evening.
I know at the Facilities Task Force meeting on Thursday, Dr. Gordon, you talked about how essential it was for us to... We had a lot of questions about how the early childhood program worked. And I know there you said that if these were our most vulnerable students and we needed to provide them with the least restrictive environment possible. And I know you were advocating for that. I don't really know HIBA, but my daughter's going to be in sixth grade with her next year. And I would love to see my daughter from Lincoln with HIBA from Churchill interacting in school together as classmates. On another subject, 2 months ago, Mrs. McCluskey presented, the bilingual coordinator, presented the results of the dual language program. I've asked for information, some information in a FOIA format, and was declined. And I just wonder why there is no data on access scores that could be presented to the public. 85% of the parents really like this program. I thought her presentation showed that, but I've just seen no data at all. And I'm a bilingual teacher and live and die by those access scores. I don't know what they are or how they've been. I know Mr. Buchholz and Mrs. Clark asked for data, and as elected board members, I think they should be presented this data. It's been 2 months. Mrs. McCluskey said she would present the data. I don't know if she has. It would be good if she got back to them, though. Finally, on Think Tank, I would like to note, to say for the record, of the tumult that the teachers went through to implement this. I mean, they worked really, really hard to make these changes. And I think you had a lot of parents that didn't want it. I applaud your decision now. I applaud Kurt and Stephanie, Mr. Buchholz and Mrs. Clark, for all the work they've done to make sure that we were actually looking at the data and the results and how parents were enjoying this or not. I think if the district had been listening to the teachers I talked to 3 years ago, they wouldn't have implemented Think Tank like they did.
15 seconds.
It was obvious to me that there were teachers that were showing up and rallying at the school board, but there were a lot of silent teachers that really didn't agree with this, but did not feel comfortable stating how they felt. I think those are the folks, you may not always agree with them, but they need to be listened to. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Curry. Mrs. Moak? Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you for coming tonight. Okay, under presentations, reports, and initiatives updates is our school perception survey presentation.
So tonight we have with us Mr. Bill Foster, who's going to take us through a fairly lengthy presentation, to say the least. Bill and School Perception have been a great partner with us on our first survey in 2014, and he and his team have continued to be that great partner during this survey cycle. I would ask the board that we try to let Bill get through the presentation and then ask all the questions you have of him at the end. Does that work? Best for you, Bill?
Works for me.
All right.
I don't like the idea of being presented that it's going to be a long presentation.
Sorry.
So I knew I was in trouble when I took all the reports and created an executive summary that was still 79 slides. So I knew I was in trouble then. But that's what we're going to look at tonight is a executive summary. I think the board's received all the reports, and I try to pick out the highlights, again, just so we would be here really, really long. But so we're going to go through the student, the parent, and the staff data. Again, I'm Phil Foster with School Perceptions. Just a little background on our company. We work in all 50 states. We're a Wisconsin-based company, actually. We've done tens of thousands of surveys throughout the country, and I get the pleasure to attend probably between 75 and 100 school board meetings a year. So this week there's only three. My first one this week. We do a lot of this work, and so we're going to go just through the highlights tonight. Maybe I'll stand. So all the surveys were conducted in January and February. We had great response rate from the staff, 75% participation. That's really right over the target of what's normal. Parents, we had 957, and students, 1788. I believe that was fourth grade and up to eighth grade. So we'll start with the students. Just a little demographic information. We are equally split, boys and girls, 50-50. We got representation from all the grades. It looks like 6th and 7th were a little bit higher, but from a percentage standpoint, just a couple of percents higher. This is the all schools. So the way this chart was created was we group the always and oftens together, and then we calculated an average. The average is a simple average calculated by if all the students would have said always, it would be a 5. If all the students would have said never, it would be a 1. So it can't be more than 5, can't be less than 1. So with the example of friends at school, 97% or 4.79% said responded that way. So it's almost everyone said always. I'm not going to go through and read all these. I trust that everybody can read this. But on the bottom, I always look at the top and the bottom. The bottom, I worry about being bullied at school. You said, that's bad. Actually, you want people to, this is kind of a negative statement, you're wanting to say never. So this was a 1.85. or 16% said always or often. Then at all schools, again, the list goes from I understand the rules at 99% down to most students obey the rules at 80%, and there are before and after school activities that interest me at 63%. See, I can get the help on my homework when needed, 94%, all the way down to my homework helps me learn more, 72%. Again, this is fourth through eighth grade. The gap analysis. So what's a gap analysis? So what we do is we ask the students how important an item is, and then we ask the students how are we doing in that area. We create kind of an apple and an orange, and then we look at a grapefruit, which is importance minus the performance, which is a gap. So things can show up with a negative gap if they're really important and we're not doing too well. So in the case of math, it's really important. We're doing actually pretty darn good, but that was the highest gap. So when the board thinks about strategic planning or how might we use this data, you typically want to start at the high gap items first, and then on things in the bottom like band and orchestra, it's in relative terms less important and we're doing pretty well, so don't spend resources worrying about that right now. That's according to the students that we're doing pretty well. So that's kind of how you might use the gap analysis. So it really comes up to the core academics, which is the focus. Do any of the following create problems with your learning? Here it was simple. We could say yes or no. So if all the students would have said yes, this is a problem, it'd be a 10. If all the students would have said no, it's a 1. Here we thought it made sense to cross-tab the data by grade level. So fourth grade, and you kind of see classes are not interesting. By the way, if you do the survey a lot, that's always the number one item. Classes aren't interesting. If we can make classes more interesting, that's good. Students learn more. And you can see that concern grows as you go from fourth grade up to eighth grade. On the bottom of the list, actually I think there might be two in this one. Poor study habits at 2.85. Give one more slide here. Yeah, there is. So difficulty speaking English was only a 1.53 for all. That was a low issue. Boyfriend-girlfriend problems, that grows a little bit, but actually not that much as you get older. Eighth grade anyway. And no places to study at home. Those are on the bottom of the list in terms of interfering with learning. Okay, we're going to move to staff now. At which location do you spend most of your time? We have a representation from all the schools, including central office. What best describes your position? Here we broke it out by teachers, pre-K 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, which are middle school teachers, special ed teachers, other teachers, non-teaching support staff, administration, other.
So here what we thought would make sense is to look at the 2015 data compared to the 2014 data and look at it longitudinally by that simple average that I talked about. Remember, in this case, it was an agreement scale. Strongly agree was a 5. Agree was 4. We don't have a neutral. So disagree was a 2. Strongly disagree was a 1. We looked at a difference. Based on our experience, we find that a significant difference is 0.2 positive or negative. So in this case, although there are a few here that was negative, our confidence in leadership over a school district went down. It's really not significant yet. And everything else is pretty much right where it was in 2014 in terms of engagement for staff. Work environment, again, really nothing significant. A little bit lower about getting the materials and supplies and needing my job, a little lower, a little more positive feeling and safe at work, 0.02 positive, but very, very close to 2014. Work environment continued again. We're up to children, three other children with respect at school. That actually has improved a bit, as well as the amount of work I'm asked to do is reasonable. It's a low score, but it actually improved a little bit from 2014. We had communication. Again, really nothing significant. I have a good understanding of the long-range plans, down a little bit, up a little bit with receiving credit and recognition when I do a good job. Culture. Here we actually have our first significant changes. By the way, green is good, red is bad. That's the key. Down just slightly was my work. My school works hard to find ways to improve, almost just down 0.01. But significantly improved as my school operates as a team. It's up to 0.26, or moved up 0.26. And I'm satisfied with our school's efforts to prevent bullying as of up 0.35. The principal, my principal, and by the way, this is all the data for the principals combined. So my principal is an effective leader for our building, down a little bit, but again, not significant. And up a little bit, my principal recognizes my ideas and suggestions for improvement. Superintendent. Superintendent is down from 2014. Superintendent is doing what it takes to make our district successful. Dropped from 4.19 to 3.79. Just to put it into context a little bit, these are still good numbers. So I think Paul was having a honeymoon early on, maybe. So these are dropped, but they're still pretty positive. The school board, first one, the board presents a positive image to our school community. This is really significantly down. So a significant is 0.2. A 1.54 drop is significant, really across the board with defiance. Overall satisfaction. Here we ask, please rate your overall perception of the district in the following areas. I believe the scale is great, good, fair, poor. By the way, the board administration is always lower than the rest of the group. The board went from 2.76 to 2.1. And district administration dropped slightly. Principal, support staff, and teachers are actually up slightly. Overall satisfaction. This is kind of, so if you just take a step back, this is the staff overall. Overall is improving since 2014. And in pretty significant ways, District 41 uses its money and resources well, went up significantly. District 41 does a good job meeting the needs of our students. That went up significantly. District 41 does a good job meeting the needs of English language learners or ELL students, went up significantly. 41 provides adequate space for students. I don't know how you're doing that, but it's improving without adding space. And overall, I'm satisfied with the District 41 facilities. That's actually gone up too. So the staff made comments. These are the themes or the summaries. So one of the questions we asked in the survey is, what suggestions do you have to make to improve communication? So the staff made those. Those have been shared in more detail with Erica. A staff member has commented on the inconsistency available on the inconsistency of available technology support throughout the district. I think in some areas it's really good, in some areas it's lacking, perceived as lacking. Staff members feel there are too many initiatives implemented without sufficient time to evaluate their effectiveness. Staff members express concern regarding the school board's behavior and would like them to work together to make positive changes for the district. And staff members share a number of the best things. So there's really, overall, staff is pretty happy, and they shared some thoughts and some comments about things that are good about the district. We transition over to parents. So here we went by school. So if I had a child in more than one school, I had the opportunity to evaluate each school. So Abraham Lincoln and the middle school. Now here what we did was, again, we looked at the item 2014-15-16, and across the board, Abraham Lincoln has improved significantly since, based on the parents' perceptions of that school. And really, there's two sets of questions here. Again, significant improvements at every level. Churchill, good news at Churchill, the parents believe things have improved.
We're only showing the ones that improved. I think there's like 27 different questions we asked, and I think so we're showing the ones that improved. We're not showing the ones where there was a decrease.
There was no decrease. Well, let's see. I don't think there were.
Go back and look.
Okay. I can go. I'll go in and then come back to it later. Well, I know
I don't
we
think
have
there were 20, but these are specifically at each school. So there are other questions outside of the school that were not school specific.
Mm-hmm. You broke them out that way.
Mm-hmm. But like Ben Franklin only has three up there, so we had like 10 specific questions at Lincoln and only three at Franklin.
There were some different questions at each school.
And these are improved items?
I don't think we left any out.
It says up there longitudinal analysis of improved
items. Right.
So these are the ones that are statistically improved?
And I don't believe we had any of this. Statistically
declined? Okay. Can help you with that.
Declined.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll come back.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah.
Okay. And Forrest, you're right. These are the improvement items. So these are, again, to make it read a little bit shorter.
Because I think there were 27 questions at every school, and we just have listed the ones where they're improved. We didn't list the ones where they weren't.
And I think the takeaway, though, is improvements at each school. I don't believe there were any significant declines. And then communications, that was a section that everybody answered once. Overall, how satisfied are you with the job district 41 is doing managing an informational website? That went up slightly. Communicating to the public went up slightly. Involving community members in decision making went up slightly. Actually, the reason that's not color coded, it wouldn't be anyway, but this is a great good pair of work. Response scale, which is different than the agreement. So the statistical significance applies to the agreement scale. And overall satisfaction, again, this is parents, just a slight decline from board, and all the other groups went up. And then the overall satisfaction up significantly were the ELL piece, preparing children for the future, and overall I'm satisfied with the District 41 academics. Again, parents, I'm significantly above, and overall I'm satisfied. District 41 does a good job meeting the needs of all students. Overall I'm satisfied with District 1 facilities went up. District 41 provides adequate space for students. Parent comment themes. Again, parents offered suggestions around communications, including ideas for website, as well as timeliness and transparency of information. Parents feel academic expectations are actually too high for younger and kindergarten students. I don't see that too often.
Parents express support for full day kindergarten. Parents would like to see the school board would like the school board to respect their and their community's ideas and concerns when making decisions. And the other thing was parents believe changes to the curriculum have been made too often. Then we also add a special section called 21st Century Initiatives. So we try to test the various components. The first component was the elementary teacher content specialization. So we have one main teacher for math, science, one main teacher for literacy and social studies. So here what we did was we took the sections from the parent survey as well as the staff survey and combined them. So you got to kind of pay attention. This is parents. As your child experience, so 64% said yes, experience teacher content specialization. Next slide. So these are parents. We asked these questions in 14 as well as 15, 16. So really nothing significantly changed, but generally as people learned about it, it was more positive. Then we asked the question, at which level do you believe subject level specialization should be implemented? This is parents. We have second through fifth grade parents in blue and all their parents in red. And you kind of see there's not a clear winner. It's kind of spread out from second grade through fifth grade. And then we asked the same question for staff. Here the staff kind of felt that fourth grade was most appropriate, with fifth grade slightly down. And do you feel your child has or will benefit from teacher content specialization? 71% of the second through fifth grade parents, 61% of the remaining parents said yes. Yes, that's good. But 13% and 9% respectively saying no. What advice would you give the district in terms of continuing to implement? This is parents. One choice was you can maintain the current practice. So we had 52% of the second to fifth grade and 41% a little lower. Another response choice was it's too early to tell. Give it more time. That was about 20%. We had 10 to 15% say return to traditional practice. 22% of all their parents, 8% of the not or the second through fifth grade said, I'm not sure. And the smallest group was, I would defer to the district and decide the best approach. We asked the same question of the staff. Here the staff said 74% of the second through fifth grade teachers said maintain. And then kind of a spattering of everything else. The all other positions, 29% said, I don't know, I'm probably not involved. The elementary multi-age instruction, I don't know, should we go through this slide?
Go through it fairly quickly.
All right.
The relevancy.
It's less relevant. Yeah. Okay, we'll do it quick. So about 48% of the parents had experienced it. Actually, it's improved in terms of the tenets of why it's done. You feel your child has or will benefit. Here we have 42% saying yes, 32% saying no, and 26% that undecided, not a clear winner either way. You feel our students have or will benefit from multi-age instructional. Here we actually have the fourth and fifth grade teachers almost 70% saying yes, with 19% saying no. What advice can you give the district? These are the parents. Here there's not really clear direction. Arguably the fourth through seventh grade parents would say are saying that's a minority majority, I would call it, at 33% saying return to traditional grade level configurations. Staff is actually slightly leaning towards maintain, but at a 35-31 to return to the fourth and fifth grade. We get to problem-based learning. 85% of the parents said my child's participating in the PBL. Have you incorporated problem-based learning into your teaching? 73% of the staff said they have. you feel children have, your child has or will benefit from PBL, 71% of parents said yes. And you feel you have adequate training on problem-based learning, here 55% of staff said yes. Do you feel students have or will benefit from PBL? All staff, majority 53% said yes, 25% said no. And what advice? These are the parents. Maintain the use of PBL, so 35%. 20% said expand it. 18% of parents saying return the reduce the use. And then, go back one more. 7% saying return. Same question for the staff. 29% of the staff said maintain, 25% said reduce, and 19% return to traditional practice, so one out of five. We have whooping. Go through this one quickly as well. Has your child whooped? If you're a teacher, that was a hard question to write, by the way. And 41% said yes, 49% said no. The parents, are you teaching whooping class? Only 20% of the staff said they were. Do you feel your child has or will benefit? 51% said yes. 20% said no of the second to fifth grade parents. Do you feel our students have or will benefit from whooping? 54% said yes. 32% said no. The teachers. And do you feel you have adequate training on the whooping concept? For the second through fifth grade, we have 41% said yes, but a majority, 54%, saying no. And what advice do you give? These are the parents. They're kind of split. Maintain looping, it's a little bit higher. Reduce looping, not sure, it's 22%. And they would refer to the district, it's at 13-14%. And these are the staff, so we look at the second to fifth grade staff. Reduce use of looping, 43%. And maintain looping in second to fifth grade, 25%. And foreign language. By the way, I don't know if I like the name police.
Is that what you
say?
Plus.
Called the police program. Plus program. The elementary foreign language program, 62% of all parents have had their child participate. Here's a clear winner. 88% of our parents believe there's a benefit to learning foreign language at a younger age, clear data. I believe there is a benefit to the staff. They're at 86%. And what advice do you give in terms of continuing the FLESS program? 74% of our parents said continue. And 61% of our staff said continue.
Wow, way to go. That was pretty good. 79 slides.
So we know that board members are going to have a lot of questions, so that there's some kind of equality among this, maybe we can start with the questions that you know you want to get answered with Bill here, and maybe there's some that we can just circle to set aside, and as we kind of watch the time, we could either, you know, get those back to Bill for responses or certainly, you know, even have a conference call or something like that. But I know there's ones that are really top of the mind for folks that we need to get at first. So do you want to start at the end and kind of move through? Or any preference?
I don't have any questions for Bill.
Okay. All right, great. Stephanie, you want to go?
I was trying to, like, compare last year's data for the schools that remember how we had the longitudinal analysis and includes item. I think it was kind of hard for me to tell trying to look at the old presentation and the new data, but I think it did look like there were 27 questions that we asked at every school, and I think we actually showed improvement on all of the areas from the couple that I rough checked.
Yeah,
and so maybe you just put in the presentation the ones that were statistically significant.
That's right.
But I think it might be good. I mean, I don't know, it's There's little pieces, but it might be good to have a summary with all of it, just to...
Okay.
It confused me, some people.
Are we missing numbers?
Did we not improve? And someone looking at it may not...
Yeah. When you see 5 on one side and 15 on the other.
Yeah, those are all significant, but
you are correct, I think... At least the ones I spot checked, you
yeah,
did
I
show.
And I looked it over, and I didn't create that report myself. When I looked at it, I didn't see any negative. I think the only this year is looking positive. But we'll provide that.
I might go through like that. One question I had for the student survey, for just all schools, for example, and we already have this data by school as well, that the board got the more detailed report by school. But did we do any analysis in the data from last year on the student survey to this year to see if there was a...
We didn't do that. I did a spot check. It was all at or better. I didn't see any concerns. We can do that. It's just time, and it's another report. It's actually 5 reports to create, so it's a fair amount of analysis we have to do. Mm-hmm. It's a board of life begin.
And it might, I mean, like for future reference, I know on the report you gave us here, it has like the average response. It won't make it too hard. I mean, it would have been nice if we had like the two, you know, the old response. Then we could just, when we're looking at it, we could just kind of know
what a lot of,
a lot of it's cross-checking, yep. I guess. I understand. But it would be good to know with the students how we performed from
so
the last
the
time.
Student one and two report.
I don't know if anybody else thinks that or not.
Just see what the cost is.
Or the cost, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. See what the cost is for that.
So, The one question I have, now the staff survey, and Paul, this may be not to you, but I'm still trying to understand. So the staff positions of teacher, other, non-building teaching, non-teacher building staff, and other, who falls into those buckets? I just want to make sure I understand that.
Yeah, let me just go to that one. So page 16, Stephanie.
We don't have page numbers
on that.
Yeah, that looks like.
Okay.
I just am trying to make sure I understand the teacher, other, non-teacher building staff, and other. Who would put?
I think it would be people
who
like.
Who would fall into which?
Probably
pocket.
Like librarians.
Mm-hmm.
Digital media.
Counselors, digital media.
That's playing me too, and I look back in 2014, I think we had 16% that fell into that group, so I think that's typical. And I think it's the educational support staff that are not teachers, aren't in the classroom, but
yeah.
are supporting education.
But who have a license, but who aren't considered, you know, in that classroom.
Okay. And what are
non-teacher building?
Would like classroom aides fall into non-teacher building staff?
But we're guessing at this stuff, right?
Because I don't know. That's what I'm trying to
understand. Yeah, we're guessing because it's
teacher self,
right?
Staff. I shouldn't say teachers.
Yeah.
Staff
yeah,
self-identified.
Whatever.
But that's how. Yeah. When we talked to Bill, that's kind of how we talked about each one of those sections.
How a person would identify
themselves. But that's a good thanks, Patrick, because it is all self-identification. So we try to give them enough.
But there wasn't a huge, the 13 to 16% is not significant in terms of self-identification.
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't
yeah.
We actually have done some tests with your neighbors. I won't mention what district it is, but we actually test if people self-identify accurately and answers yes, they do.
Interesting.
So.
Yeah. Teacher other would be like a coaches and...
Yeah, that's how we, like yeah, the teacher... the coaches, the PBL coaches, the literacy coaches, math coaches, those types of pieces.
Okay. And then everyone else would be other.
Yeah.
Do we know, and you may not have this information, I know we said 75% of the staff took the survey, but do we know, like if we were to look at our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade teachers, was it kind of about 75% of that position also took the survey? Was it kind of equal amongst positions?
Typically,
you may not have that.
Yeah, I don't know. It typically is. I don't know it specifically.
Okay. For the longitudinal analysis, I know you said the scores are all good, if they're above the 3, to make sure I understand it. So based on the answers on the survey, like a 5 would be strongly agreed, 4 is agreed, 3 is disagreed.
Nope.
So
what it is there's no neutral in our response.
Okay.
So a strongly agree is a 5, agree is a 4, disagree is a 2, and strongly disagree as a one. When we started our company, we asked a number of people, and then, by the way, the academia is split on should there be a neutral or not. And so we chose to force a leaning so that we removed the neutral. And it's the way we've always done it. And that's why the weighting kind of reflects the neutral not being there. If we would have had one, it would have been a three to remove that. And that's why the averages begin to move. As a person who's to disagree, it pulls the averages a little more than just in a linear fashion, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So that any that answered don't know doesn't apply.
They are not going to answer the question.
The number. So I noticed for the 21st century initiative, maybe it's not, I know it may not be critical for like multi-age, but for specialization, I know last year when you reported out at the staff level, and I don't have last year's report to show you, but I know we, for the staff, we didn't break it out by second, by a teacher level. We actually put all positions. That was from page 16, I think, all the different positions.
Oh, okay.
K1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and admin, other. We put all the positions, and we actually put where they fell into the bucket. For, I know we did it last year for the teacher specialization and for multi-age. I was wondering if you could see that type of analysis.
Would that align? Here.
It's going to be similar to what you're saying already, but it might change slightly.
Well, and I guess more I'm thinking for teacher specialization, we've lumped second through fifth grade teachers together. I'm more curious, second and third, do they have a different feeling about it than fourth and fifth, for example? Since when you look at what grade would you implement teacher specialization, there's a big jump at fourth grade versus second and third. So.
So
that's how we looked at it last year. We broke out all the staff positions.
By what they were doing at a grade level, you're saying?
By what advice would you give the district in terms of continuing to implement teacher specialization?
Mm-hmm.
By the feedback was presented by staff positions last year.
So you could do that. And you can cross-tab it by those responses.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like, here's one. Here's the multi-age one. So we have like a chart like here, and I've hit all of the positions and extend multi-age, maintain it, return for traditional grade level practice. It's too early to tell. And we had a different bar for every one of the teaching positions. That was just how it was presented. I mean, I didn't create it. That was what
right,
was presented
I
in our report
that
last
too.
Year.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, we were trying to make sure that we had
comparing to last year. If you look at it. Look at those the same way as we did that last time.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, when you said you don't, there might be some changes, but not significant. I don't put words in your mouth.
Yeah.
What happens with that?
Well, it's the same data. You're just going to divide it out a little differently. So it's not going to change the data tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
But you could certainly do that. You know, cross-tab it by position for that question.
Which would be to answer whether or not there is a significant 0.20 change, whatever that metric.
Yeah, that's not quite right, but
yeah, whatever that metric is. Yeah, sorry, I'm thinking in our summaries, it's a 0.2.
Yeah, like last year, for example, for teacher specialization, 2-3 teachers said 56% said maintain it. And then for 4-5 teachers, 73% said maintain it. So in my mind, that's a significant difference. And if you have that big of a difference and we're combining it into the percentage we show here, that's not necessarily we're not really able to capture that difference. And we did it last year, so I'm just mm-hmm. for consistency, shouldn't we be looking at the data the same way that we did last year?
We can.
And maybe not all of those, how about we just do second, two through three? Because that's really what you want to see, don't you? You want to see 2-3 and 4-5. Have all, you know, the 2-5.
2-5.
I don't know if you really want to see all the bar graphs for everything else. I think what you're saying is you really want to see what the second and third grade teachers are saying on teacher specialization, 4-5 teachers are.
I think that's probably
would that be
important.
Enough?
I mean, that's probably the most
important. Yeah, I don't know if we need to see the others. And
to see if that shifts it.
Yeah, no, no. But if that would probably make it a little bit more streamlined for Bill. Does that make, is that okay?
It might, it will be interested to see if it aligns with what you're saying, which is, as you look at the numbers here, if these percentages shift significantly. Because
yeah,
the larger population of answering this is the teachers.
Right. So I think what we showed was second through fifth, so we're just going to split that data into two parts instead of one.
Right.
You know, I mean, not that this matters, but for moving, I noticed for the parent reporting out, you separated out parents of second through fifth grade parents and all other parents. And I was wondering, I know those are the parents whose kids are in grades that will move, but actually fifth graders aren't actually going to move because they're going to Hadley. So I was wondering if it would have made more sense to look at when parents, there's the box that you take, my child has experience looping, if it would be more helpful to compare that to all other parents versus just second to third grade parents. But
that's part of the design of the tool.
Because in the past,
we could do it that way too.
In last year's survey.
Do we need it though?
But
what might it tell us is the question.
Well,
it's another way
of doing it.
I
just don't want him doing something that we don't.
You're right. That was a bad example.
No, I just don't want him.
We don't want to pay for that.
Don't use anything. We could use any of them. I don't know that we need to go redo all the reports, but I guess the last time we did it, the parameter that we used for reporting out on parents was, does your child loop? Does your child have foreign language? We use that as the parameter to separate out the parents. Now, and this year we use the grade level. And it's mm-hmm. a different way of looking at it, and I think for consistency we need to maybe decide going forward how we're going to look at that. If you're just going to ask mm-hmm. if a parent has experienced it, do we count them separately from everyone else, or are you going to look at the grade level? So.
Yeah, I think the argument is, have you experienced it, or if you're going to be experiencing
right.
it in your turn. Both are.
But it's asking a different question. I mean, if you've not had the experience, then it's projecting. And to me, it's less, it's perception versus I've had this experience, this is what it means to me. So I guess I would question the relative value of that in a survey that's looking for, concrete data. But what I would add to what you're asking about, Stephanie, is to go back it seems to make some sense to go back, with the administrative team and the building leaders to decide what's going to help us with some action planning. So, for instance, one that jumped out is adequate training around problem-based learning, which is we're in our second year. That's a learning curve. That's all, continuous improvement pieces. But things like that where our building leaders could say, this is where that data might be more appropriate to break it down as an action item. Instead of doing it all, they're the ones going to be using it. What's going to be most effective for them? Because it goes back to the buildings, right?
Right, absolutely.
So, but good, I think good pieces to check out so that we can double check it.
It's different questions from the survey, and we've reported out differently the last time than we did this time. It was all data that was on the survey, but how we're reporting is different. So I think moving forward, it would be nice to be consistent, report out, use the same parameters, or maybe we need to decide what's the best parameters to use and to report it out.
So you're talking about the next time we take the survey to look at it and predetermine the parameters.
Right. Because it changed from last time to this time.
Was there a reason for that? Is it aligned with your other surveys, or?
No. This is a unique survey. These five sections are unique.
Actually, that's one of my questions, so I'll get to it.
No, I think we were just trying to figure out what would be most helpful for the board and not do a 200-slide presentation. So easy. And I can see both arguments. I think both are helpful. It's just a matter of how much detail and how many slides you want to have.
Yeah,
but we can
that's
certainly,
fair.
It would help us if we said, okay, this is how we want it, and
I didn't have any more questions. I had some comments about it, but I didn't have any questions for Bill, so I don't know if you want to move along with the questions.
Is this your final question?
Yeah, why don't we do questions, then we can all make a statement at the end. Yeah.
I will. I think you just answered my first one, and that I wanted to ask you if you thought in your professional opinion if this was a typical survey.
Yeah, so parts of the survey, so we do a lot of surveys that are, if you think about a survey, it's really to gather perceptions. And so typically with staff, student, and parents, you measure things such as engagement, satisfaction, social, emotional safety, satisfaction with climate, all the climate components. That's typical. And if you do that, you get pretty good data. And you can, and especially if you do it and you use it, some of our tools that allow us to do good comparisons with similar districts, then you not only have longitudinal data, but you also have comparison data.
Comparison.
Which is very, very helpful. Because And this survey kind of morphed into its own thing. So it's difficult for us. There's a lot of questions that aren't quite our benchmark or what we call our master questions. So it's kind of become its own thing. And we didn't want to change it too much, so because we wanted to provide the longitudinal data.
Right.
The 21st Century Initiatives piece is unique. And it goes to a question of who do you want setting and designing curriculum? Most districts don't go to a place where they're doing that by a survey. Most districts would say, that's the district administration's job. These are the PhDs, these are the experts that we hire, and it's their job to establish instructional strategies to teach our kids. When you put that out to parents, they don't know. They just don't know, and nor should they. So this is kind of uncharted waters. We do a little bit of this. We do more of it with staff, and specifically not so much on what we should be doing, but what professional development and training you need to be. So they're there to execute the strategy that is designed by the administration. So we're kind of into a, and I think as we saw, there's not clear. You're not going to do a survey and have everyone agree when they don't know. And they have probably some parents are very, very, very knowledgeable. Some really, they don't think about education and worry about the school district providing that.
But Bill, you said, I didn't mean to interrupt, but you said it more. You were the one that designed the first survey, so how did it really morph into something
else? Well, it morphed because there were some climate questions that were typical, then it went through revisions.
Mm-hmm.
More and more people got involved and began designing the survey questions, which is okay. But we move farther away from using our standard questions that are research-based and benchmarkable.
But how far off did we get from that? Well, Erica interrupted Stephanie. Not interrupted, but piggybacked off.
This last cycle, we spent about 6 months working on questions, and I can't remember the first cycle, so I don't know if you could say by percentage or by hours, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
My concern was to ask if this was typical, if other schools did this, and I think I just got the impression from your answer that this is atypical.
Parts of it is to the 21st programs. Century piece is atypical, the other piece is more typical.
Yes, okay. That was what I was concerned with. I didn't know if other school districts asked their parents about things like this.
And not about instructional strategies.
Okay. So, with a survey like this, how often do you think we should conduct a survey like this to be able to get data? How often is it relevant?
Well, I think typical is staff surveys we typically do every year. Parent surveys can be every year, every other year. And student surveys we typically do every year. It's a function also of do we think we have a problem or not? If we don't think we have a problem, then we might get into a rotation where we do parents every other year, students every other year, staff every year. Staff, you can't underestimate the importance of staff.
Yeah.
And you got to make sure. The other thing from a communication standpoint, we've done a lot of research in this area, that no matter how good Eric is, staff is communicating to parents every day. There's thousands of conversations going on, informal conversations. So you got to be sure you're close to your staff. They're very, very important. And then parents and students are really experiencing the byproduct of what's happening from that system. And it's a lagging, those are lagging indicators more. There's more time delay between what you change and then how it's felt. So it's okay to slow those down.
Okay. With the size of the survey you said a minute ago, this could have been 200 pages.
Is
this
report?
Yeah, the report. Is this too much data? Not enough data? About right? In your opinion, it's just we're looking for a professional thing.
Yeah, it's really it's a question back to the board of how do you view your role. And so typically, a board would receive a high-level report to adjust policy, address governance issues, oversight, make sure our administration's doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And after, that's about it. Then to go into that next level of detail, that's the administration's job typically, and they would receive some more detailed reports.
Okay. And I don't have a lot more questions, actually, but I do have one. Maybe it's around this. When we were looking at the greens and the reds, and you said it's about 0.2 is important. So being a member of this board and seeing what we got as a board, as the comments back, there's some pretty big red numbers there. How big of a concern?
It's a major concern. I mean, it's probably one of the biggest drops I've ever seen. So that's a significant concern.
And I work with a lot of CEOs and boards and things like that. And I know one can have an effect on the other. What's the effect of the board? When we have what we have with the board, is it unreasonable to expect that would affect the superintendent or the staff as well?
I think a lot of so as you move away from this room with administration and board, we collapse administration and the board together.
That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of times you look at a board and you look at a CEO and then they start to become the same thing.
Yep.
And so it wouldn't be a stretch, or you tell me if this would be a stretch, to say that if we got bad scores as a board, we might pull down Dr. Gordon's score.
Absolutely true. Yep.
In your opinion?
Well, you're part of the same team and yeah. the view of parents and the view of staff.
Mm-hmm. Can I piggyback off of Dean's question just for a second?
Absolutely.
I can think of another one. Like, I guess the one thing that the question I have is that we asked the staff four questions about the school board, and that's where we saw the significant drop was staff. To the parents, when we asked about the school board, there was a little bit of a drop, but it was really statistically insignificant. So is it typical when you do surveys that you would ask the staff so many questions about the board and you would not ask the parents the same number, if not more questions?
Yeah, typically we'd ask more questions of the parents. We actually ask, there's three that we ask the board typically.
So I guess I know
so how do
that,
we not do that?
I know that.
Well, through the revisions of the survey.
But you're the one that was advising us to that. How does that happen? The people that are actually paying the bills had no opportunity to comment. And so, you know, you can say that it's a revisions problem, but in the end, you're the one that has to go back and say, is this, you're our expert, right? So I'm going to put it back on you a little bit as the person that we paid for this. You're the one that's got, I mean, to me, it's stunning that it could be allowed to pass through, that one question was asked about the board from of the parents. We had, I believe it was five questions to the staff. Now, I'm not sure how much you understand about this, but we don't represent the staff. We're elected by the parents. We represent the taxpayer. The administration oversees the staff. So for me, when I'm looking at this, and the parents paid for this survey, it's just incredible that you would have missed that. You can blame it on revisions all you want, but you were the one that created the first survey, and then you said it more. I don't think the survey is that much different. Now, there were some new initiatives that were added. That wasn't anything to do with the board. The board just wanted to see what was going on with those initiatives, so they were added. But you actually missed that part of it. Never, if you did advise staff, they never told us. So that I'm sorry.
Can we let Bill respond?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So the way we design a survey is the district, our customer, defines a scope. Like on the initial scope, the board was not a concern. If there would have been three, four questions that we would ask of the parents, then we'd have the data you're looking for. My suspicion, based on the comments we got from the parents, that it wouldn't have been good. we would have been able to quantify it, which we can't, but we can see from the comments there was a theme there that is, they're not impressed with all the work.
Yeah, but so I.
No, and again, I mean.
I don't want to argue with them, I want to ask them questions. Okay? So the last thing I want to ask you is when I see this minus 1 point, or minus 1.54, minus 1.86, and you said 0.2 is statistically significant, because I get to stumble over that. So. Mm-hmm. So this is outrageously significant, in my opinion. Not yours, I'm not asking you to agree with me. When I see that, how important are the comments? Do I care about, you know, we're looking at data here.
Right.
When do I go to the comments to explain the data?
You don't. And comments are really, really tricky to use. They're very subjective. They're anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a project for a district down in your neighborhood, and there was a senior superintendent lady who's probably 65, 70 years old, and she said it really well. She said, Bill, it's like reading bathroom walls. She said, if one person writes something, you don't worry about it, but if 10 people are writing the same thing, it might be true. And it's kind of, that's how you almost should think about it. And I didn't say that. It's written properly. But I thought that's a good way to think about it. You want to use the quantitative results to direct your priorities, your initiatives, your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might want to drill into the comments and say, okay, we need to refine and understand it more. The other side of the comments, though, is we absolutely ensured respondents that their anonymity would be kept. So we don't want to release comments where you say, show me all the, you know, second grade teachers, what did they say?
Yeah, we wouldn't ask.
And that we wouldn't do. Because you know, then you begin to violate that trust that we've built with the staff.
Nobody's asked for that.
No. Thanks. But you say you wouldn't.
That's all the questions I have for Bill.
Are you good? Okay.
Yeah, for
you
right now.
You actually asked mine. I had posed this question which speaks to a little bit of what we just talked about. There was a significant amount of board member input on this survey. What's your feedback on the development of the tool moving forward? So my thought about this, and I suppose it's a little bit of a concern, but you know, when I read all the information about your organization, one of the things that impressed us, you know, me a couple years ago was your master question list and those samples that you gave us, because then you're repeating, it's you know, and that's that longitudinal piece. So we had a lot of input on the survey, more than I personally believe we should as a board. This is administrative work, and my own opinion about it is that it's got to go back there. But what's your advice on that?
The way I would recommend that we design the survey is to start with our master questions, and then you say there's a couple issues here that we want to drill into, or that are unique to District 41. We're going to add those in addition to our base, and then you stick with. So it's a hybrid survey, but that's the, you know, that's 70, 80, 90% of the survey, and then you add on a few other items.
Mm-hmm.
So through all the revisions in the first draft as well as this draft, we just kept going further and further away to try to incorporate all the input that we got.
Right.
We worked on it from like July through December.
It's been a lengthy journey.
Yeah. And I'll disclaim that comment by saying it's really important to get the information. You know, we want to be asking these questions. The challenge is doing it in a way that moves us forward, you know, gives us that long-term view of it, and then allows you to be able to take some of this and juxtapose it against, you know, other local districts. Part of your value is that you have this tool that we can, you know, do a deeper dive in terms of how we're doing versus other, you know, similar districts. So
just a comment on District 41 overall. Most districts I go to are criticized for not trying anything. And we're doing the same way we've done it 40, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. You're trying to push the envelope. You're trying to innovate the way you educate. It's good for you. That's not the typical problem.
That you've seen in your experience.
What most districts is, why aren't we trying anything different?
Mm-hmm.
So it's ironic almost that you are pushing it and you're having a challenge with it.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have my kids attending a school that's trying things that are new.
Mm-hmm. That's just an observation. Good. One other thing under culture, you know, we and this ties into Dean's question about the, you know, repeating the survey on the longitude analysis for culture with the staff. My school works hard to find ways to improve. I have adequate opportunities. We did the HumanX survey. I think that Erica Craville probably told you that. So that's, we had our baseline year this year, and now the commitment is to do that on an annual basis. So it ties into your comment about how important it is to hear staff's voice, and that's a commitment. Actually, that was an interview question of Dr. Gordon when he interviewed 3 years ago, is what do you do with that? Because we knew he had done it in his previous district. But I noted that there's 6 out of the 13 questions under culture and principle are very similar, almost replicated, to the HumanX survey. And so it ties into some of this this survey that I talked about during HumanX, which is this Gallup poll on the most important things in a work environment. So I personally was glad to see that, because then again, it ties back into something that we're getting culture information. Same research, right? Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to point that out, because I think it's good for the board to see that there's alignment between the surveys at some level that we can, you know, draw from too. So that, and you answered my question about how often we do it. One observation is that it's every other year. I'm going to look to Nancy, Mrs. Moak on this, but is it every other year we do the five essentials? So we did it
last
year. So that five essentials will be coming up, which I think we do in January.
Year.
Yeah, so odd years, right? So it'll be January of 2017. So we have that we're plugging in as a tool. And so I think, you know, as the administration looks at how much and what we choose to use for a survey tool, we've got that already plugged in our odd years. So it speaks to, you know, where do we want to focus? Yep. And that's it. Two other questions were answered, so thank you. Drew?
Bill, I have a very quick question. And it's really a timing question. And as I recall, we were told that the survey needed to be done every 18 months?
No. Typically it's done the same time every year if possible.
Okay, so we need to look to do the survey at the same time every year.
That, you know, there's two things going on. One is that'll give you a little more comparison data. On the other hand, you have to think about your planning cycle, your improvement cycle. When do we need the data so we can analyze the data so we can deploy strategies and make improvements? And sometimes that trumps that. That'll move things a little bit. So it's not, you know, if in the ideal world you'd run it at the exact same time each year, each school year. But we also realize there's other things going on that might cause that not to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bill? For clarity, Drew, though, my notes were staff surveys once a year, parents and kids as lagging indicators of the program, which would be every other year.
So
what
he said it could be every year.
Every year. Every other year.
Some districts do it every year. Some districts do it every other year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some districts do it every 3 years, not many. There's a few districts that do it twice a year, which I think is a bad idea too. So every year or every other year.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, thanks, Kurt.
Well, my first question on the staff survey: Why didn't we break out the principal data by school?
We can certainly do that
because they do it under the, as Erica mentioned, the five essentials. They do it that way. I'm just curious if there was a reason why we didn't.
No, we can certainly do that.
Stephanie touched on most of my questions. I would just say, you know, obviously we need to take, at this point we need to take the data, figure out, you know, I'd like to see the staff give us, you know, HumanX as well, give us, you know, what types of things at least keep us updated on how they're moving forward with this, with this data as far as that goes, you know, and said my piece to you. You know, I appreciated your op-ed comments. So, thanks.
Joe?
Yeah, I'm just going to go back to something you said. Two questions. Besides what you guys already answered, because I'm the last one. But on the superintendent data, you had made a reference that this is what I want to get the questions. When I look at these, I see numbers of 3.413, 4.13 on the five questions and indications. But where do you consider the concern on the absolute, not on longitude data, because that slide shows the longitude data. I'm sorry if I'm picking on you here.
Isn't that okay?
But we
break it down.
I agree with Jack and down.
I don't necessarily. That was the opinion of the survey.
I'll agree with that. I'll make a statement that I agree with it. But on the question part, just on an absolute value of that 3.41 through the 4.13, I just want to get the overall feeling of that. Because I think what you said when you get that pages up, those are still good numbers. The honeymoon. He was here for roughly 1 year, and he was in the 4.45 to a low of 3.57 on the five questions.
Yeah, that's a good example of where using master questions would allow us to look at comparisons.
So these are master questions.
They're been tweaked.
Okay.
They're similar, but then we get into this subjective thing. Is it close enough? Did it have the same essence? So I can't answer it, but just based on seeing numbers, these are still very good for a superintendent. However, it is true that the longer a superintendent is with the district, the more difficult decisions they have to make. Consequently, there's some people that don't like the superintendent as much as they did the year before. So that will, it will go down a little bit, but these are still very good numbers so far.
Yeah, because when you compare it to the board, we're in all the twos except the last one, we're in 2.25. And I'm guessing anything under three is where you start having a major concern based on your scale.
Yeah.
So that's fine. Okay, that was my main question. The other one, the idea, I guess the question for the bulletin board, because I had like the slide idea in my head, and I understand we just keep coming more with slides, we're just really asking for what cost to be added to what we've already paid for the survey. So I'm not going to ask for that only because I think after your presentation, it makes everything clearer, so I do appreciate you doing that for us. So.
Great. Any other comments people want to make?
There may be. I want to make sure I understand the agenda. This is when we have questions for Bill. I know there's a discussion item that talks a little bit about the survey again. Do you view this as the time we should comment on any more things for the survey or hold it until we have the next discussion item?
No, that discussion item is particularly about staff survey verbatims, so... Is that what the one you're referring to?
Yes, it's
No, we'll get to that as a separate item.
So this is okay.
Any other comments?
Well, I'll let Patrick start again, I guess.
Any other closing comments?
Are we back to Bill?
Any other general closing comments? We're just doing a little closing comment.
Well, I mean, it's the data is surveys are point in time, right? So it's going to provide us something that builds off qualitative data. Yeah, we're seeing some positives. We're seeing a huge negative on the board representation. I think we have to take this as a tool. We have to take this as an analysis. I don't think we should use it as use it for what it is. I mean, we got to read the data. We got to interpret the data. We just got it. It's not something that I'm with this back that we got is reams of paper to go through and to for me to try to encompass it in 30-second presentation of where we are in the district. I think when this is published out to the community, they'll make their own representations, but as a board member, I got to take it all into effect and digest it and use it as a decision-making tool going forward. It's another utility that my fingertips to use. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Thank you. Comments?
I guess I have a couple. I mean, first, I want to point out, like, I know that we gave input into the survey, but we were really just giving input for what things we wanted to include in the 21st century initiatives portion of the survey. I mean, I think 90% of the survey did not change. It stayed the way it was. We weren't going through and saying, oh, we should take out these questions about the schools. It was more, we were just trying to discuss what things we felt were important to add to the survey.
Mm-hmm.
I am concerned about the school board feedback, mostly because it was the same on the last survey and this one, where the staff was given four questions about the board, and the parents were only given one. And, you know, everyone is entitled to their opinion, but I guess we are elected by the community and by the parents. I mean, not just the parents, the community at whole. So I think it would be really important when we do a survey this spring that we actually are asking the community four questions about the board and giving the community a chance to comment, because the parent survey did not have a comment section about the board. And I know when you read the comment section from the staff, they had plenty of things to say about us, mostly with how we interact with each other. But I just, looking through the parents, I still go back to the parent survey, the staff, the board difference is statistically insignificant from last year. And I went through the parent comments. The only section where the parents could comment on the board was what is the best thing about the district or what is the worst thing about the district. And there was about roughly 380, close to 400 comments from the parents, and I only counted about a dozen where they commented on the board, which is maybe 3%. So in my mind,
Bill said that it was.
I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair to say that if you were to ask the parents the same questions, if their opinion would be the same, because I'm not seeing the same feedback from the parents. So I have to take the information. I mean, we also have to keep in mind we're asking opinions about to the staff, who we may make some decisions that they don't like, and we may have conversations.
The same holds true of the
like.
Superintendent.
So
it can hold true of the
I'm not
board
saying,
as well.
But I just, I'm a little concerned that we're focusing on that when it's the staff, not even the parents. The other thing I did notice, I wanted to point out, you know, the survey made me think of it with looping and teacher specialization. One of the concerns with teacher specialization was that especially the younger students would only have a teacher half the day, and they're not going to get to know their kids, especially young 7-year-olds. And the logic was, well, we're going to loop, then your teacher will have them for 2 years. So even though they only have them half a day 1 year, they'll have them a half a day for 2 years, which would be equivalent to all day 1 year. And that was a major proponent of the specialization. And now that we don't have the looping, how is this going to impact the younger kids who will only truly have a teacher half a day, and they're probably not going to have them 2 years as well. Another thing that I noted on the survey, and kind of to what Kurt said, I mean, I think really the administration needs to take the survey and figure out what our next steps are. There's a lot of comments in a lot of different areas, and I think that we need to figure out what we're going to do with those. You know, there's some good feedback, there's some negative feedback, but try to figure out what to do with those and next steps for our district. But the one piece that I noticed, if we just look at two things I wanted to point out on here. The PBLs, I think we need to be looking at that just based on the feedback from the staff on PBLs. I mean, the staff and the parents have differing opinions on what we should do with that, but the majority of the staff, it seems like, are concerned with us continuing to move forward with it. So I think that's something we need to look into.
The majority of the staff?
Well, if you look, I think the majority of the staff said reduce the use of it or return to traditional practice. If you add those two up, that's 44%.
They don't mean the same thing necessarily.
Not necessarily, but I mean, I guess they didn't say maintain it, but they're mm-hmm. calling for some sort of a reduction from the majority of their staff. And I noticed there were a lot of comments about it from staff that were positive, but some questioning the effectiveness of the younger grades and missing out maybe on fundamentals in place of PBLs. Maybe it's more appropriate for the older grades. some really good suggestions for, like, at Hadley, maybe, like, the teens should do one great good PBL mm-hmm. instead of doing it in all the classes. So I think that's something we should really take the staff's feedback into account and their comments in evaluating that. And then I saw from the staff and on the parents, there were a lot of complaints about special education. I mean, that was, came glaringly across. And I think, you know, one thing I'm wondering is if we even, if we're at a point we need to have maybe an outside party come in and evaluate, I think there's concern with decisions that are made and from the top down, and maybe it's time to get someone.
Have you saw that?
No, in the comments. The comments. Oh, I'm the talking comments. About the comments. So just something I noticed, want to mention it, I think, you know, concern about resources, concerns that we're making decisions solely based on money and not with trust with it. So I think those are all my thoughts.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
This may take a few minutes. I hear your comments on this, and I've got some concerns. We just all got this data in the last 2 weeks, and I assure you there is tons of data we've been pouring through. But when I look at it, what I saw right off the bat is this tremendously bad rating that we as a board, the people who sit here at this table, got. And statistically, it looks to me like a major problem compared to what other things are in this report, even things that are as contentious as looping and multi-age and things like that we've talked about. The changes and the differences that I see there compared to the differences here, to me, are astounding. That it's not a minor thing. It's a major thing to me. This is my opinion. I'm not asking you to agree with me. And when I look at the parent survey, overwhelmingly, and this won't work for the people who are streaming it because I've been on that end before and you can't see it, but these are the comments from the parents about what was great in this district. And what I did is highlighted on each of these pages, and there's 20-some pages of this, and almost everywhere it says, excellent teachers, really great teachers. It goes on and on about the thing that separates this district from other districts. What they like the best is the teachers. We hear that. You like the teachers. You like the administration. That's in here a lot, too. So we get that. And then I look at this and see these numbers, and it's been said a couple times already, you know, this thing about the parents that were elected by the community. Well, remember, the community is not just the parents. We've already had this discussion many times. About 20-some percent of our staff lives in the community. They elect us. There's the parents in the community, but there's also about 70% of the people who elect us who aren't the parents, that aren't even on the survey. And when I look at the numbers and see the negatives and get into the details of the negatives, even looking at the negatives for the superintendent, if I take the strongly agree, and these are positive questions, the areas of those range from a high of 85% strongly agree things like that he presents a positive image to a low of 52%, which is the superintendent is aware of major concerns of the employees, and the employees are the teachers and the staff that we're all saying is very important to us. The community is saying, this is what's important. We maintain these teachers, maintain the staff. When I look at ours, in ours, we don't have a single item that when you add strongly agree and agree together for a positive, that it crests 50%. As a matter of fact, our highest is 48.6. Our lowest is 28.27, and that's the board presents a positive image to the school community. And to me, that's appalling on part of this board. So I take that very seriously, and I think that this is something that is very important. And to look at this and say that someone's concerned that we're focusing on this, I would look at this data, and I would be concerned with anybody at this table who isn't focusing on this item. this is the item. In this survey, if you're looking for things, you can go in here and mine data left and right and compare something to something else. This is the item that is enormous. It's glowing. It's the elephant in the room. It's red in here because that's the way you color-coded it. This is the only item that this board should be working on right now. I think until we work on this item, we don't have credibility to work on anything else. This is the staff. We had a community participant just show up here a little while ago and say, I think it was Mr. Curry, that he said, we need to listen to the teachers. And then, Bill, I asked you a question, and you said, we can't underestimate the importance of staff. And just now, when Stephanie was talking about PBL, she said, we need to be concerned with staff feedback. And I don't know how we can listen to the teachers, not underestimate the importance of staff, listen to the staff feedback on PBLs, and then disregard it when it comes to the board. To me, this is impossible to think of this circuit that way. And the fact that we would sit up here and talk about these other items just shows me how bad we're missing the point. And I have gone through each and every one of these comments, and I've read them way more than once. And I've tried to put them together in any way that I could put them together to see what is this telling me about the staff. You had said you used an anecdote. And a lot of times in this board we use an anecdote about a parent says this or a teacher says this, and you used one about a bathroom wall, and you said if it's on there once, maybe it's not a big problem. If it's on there 10 times, we might have a problem. There are 55 comments from the staff that talk about bullying, disrespect, verbal abuse. We have policies. I'm on the policy committee. We have policies that talk about this. In our school system, we actually, the staff has rights that has to do with they can make claims if they feel like they're being bullied. And by the way, it's in the policy, they can make claims against that if they think they're being bullied by the board. There are 55 comments that if it doesn't specifically call out bullying, it talks about disrespect, verbal abuse. I don't understand how we can sit here and not care about these comments. To say that we should go back and look at it, this is the only thing we should be working on. There isn't another thing this board should work on until we get past this so that we can regain some confidence from this community. Because the community is telling us the teachers are important. Listen to the teachers. The teachers are talking. They have 15 pages of comments. I think, is this being released, is it not?
Tomorrow we'll have all the information, the comments and everything up on our website tomorrow.
So all this data is going to be up. I think this is important enough that this should be read into the record. I think these comments about us on this board should be read into this record so that we can make sure. Other times we've sat at this table and we've said, this is an important letter. I want to read this letter and make sure it gets into the record. This is an important comment in a minute, and I want to make sure that we go back and argue over how we're going to say this in a minute, because these meetings are important. And I think there's people streaming this right now who have no idea what these comments are, and when you release 400 or 500 or 600 pages, they're never going to find it. I want to read these.
Encourage people, based on your comments and what I'm going to say as well, to do that, Drew, Dean, to do it.
I feel like it should be part of our minutes. It should be part of what we say, and I want to know what other board members think.
Well, I just want to respond to that a little bit. I when we're talking about the staff, that is not just classroom teachers. I mean, the staff that took the survey, you know, the classroom teachers is actually a minority of the staff on the survey. It's all the admin. It's everyone who works in all the buildings. So, you know, there's a distinction there. When I said there's people whose staff that took the survey, they may not agree with some of the things we've talked about or decisions we've made. That's not necessarily.
So you don't think these are important?
No, I think you were saying that we should listen to the teachers. I wasn't saying discount any of this, but I'm saying it's not just classroom teachers.
When I said this, I said this is teachers and admin. You can go through this, the positive stuff about our parents.
I understand.
Say teachers and admin. They look at the staff as part of the admin. That's what they look at. The staff is everybody at D41 that they have come in touch with. They make comments in here about dealing with the teachers, dealing with the other people in the staff, dealing with the other people in the administration. They view it as one. We can parse it. That's fine. But there are 55 comments.
I understand that.
That's
I wasn't
it. And that's only 55 of the comments. There's way more than that.
I wasn't saying discount them. I mean, most of the comments in here talk about our interaction with each other, how we interact with each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something different.
That's what you think these comments
but,
that's why I think these should be read into the record.
Okay.
Because
well,
I do not believe that's what these comments
I think as a board, we should actually, I mean, I
we talk about transparency. We should read these comments into the record.
Dean, you're going on about transparency. The last survey, I believe there were people here that had to fight to get those comments and everything put on. Please, nobody's blocking comments from being put up. Put them up. We're transparent. But you're talking about a specific group of people saying teachers. And you're trying to correlate that to the survey as if saying that it was all teachers that were making the comments. And the point is that Stephanie's making, there's a larger portion of people or equal amount of people making those, could be making those comments not necessarily coming from teachers.
I don't care if it's teachers or staff.
It does make a difference. You know why it makes a difference, Dean? It makes a difference because at this level, this board finally has some people that are not rubber stamping things. And that maybe becomes uncomfortable to people. With
Kurt.
Dean, when you're trying to protect the taxpayer and you're going to possibly take away someone's pension payment that you don't think is fair as a board member because you represent taxpayers, do you think that those people are going to be happy with me? No. Do you think there's items in here that are about you?
I know there are, and I'm more than willing to read those in the
record. As far as discourse goes, it happens. We're not going to agree. We're actually going through a lot of things.
That's why these need to be read in the record. Because this isn't about this.
If you want to take the whole time, it's fine. Read them into the record, Dean. It doesn't matter.
You
can do whatever you want to do.
I think.
To that,
just
for a
go ahead, Joe. And then I want to make clarification. Excuse me. Excuse me, Mr. Curry. Joe?
Sorry. People are throwing percentages around. Just in one of the slides, you had broken everybody down by position, and I know that this is that individual saying who they are. So, but it sounds like they get it 100% right most of the time. So we're really good down here. But anything that doesn't have a teacher is 34%. So we're throwing, there's more non-teachers here. Anything that doesn't have a teacher associated with it is 34%. That means anything that has teacher associated with it on this is 66%. Just so
the teacher other is not a teacher.
Yeah. Right. So that's 20%. But it's a teacher.
It's not a classroom teacher.
I don't disagree
with
that.
Well, but they're not a classroom teacher. They don't necessarily.
And I'm not saying that the teacher's going to make the comments. I just wanted.
I think you know what this conversation is to me a really good example of our losing our way. And to the extent that when I look through this and coming in here tonight, I concur with Dean in that, you know, what jumped out on me is, and I'll add to the fact that as the board president, certainly I feel this in a way that is, maybe not differently, but I feel it more viscerally because in this role of facilitating, in this role of managing, in this role of decorum, in this role of wanting to present an image, certainly to the public and to this organization, of a board that is working in the best interest of the community, we're not there. I understand what you want to do, Dean. In the interest of time, what I want to suggest is, since we have people here, we certainly have the press here, and those live streaming, that I would truly encourage community members, parents who feel education very personally because it's your child day-to-day going there, community members who have supported this district with their tax dollars, read our annual report, are getting our Connect in the mail to understand what we're doing here to educate all children, staff members, 22% of whom do live in this district. That is the statistic, 22%.
It's 22%.
Yeah. And the rest of us to really take our time to look through those comments. When people write something, it is a response to, it is making time, not taking it, but making time to respond to that. And I would like, in my closing comments, to read what I put together tonight so that I could give clarity around what I'm feeling. With the survey data that School Perceptions has presented tonight, I believe that District 41 is delivering an education to children that is worthy of our support, worthy of our backing as a board. I also believe that it recognizes the hard work daily that staff, teachers, and building leaders put into teaching all of our children. The data shows the District 41 administration areas to sustain, where we're doing things well, and areas to critically review for improvement. The longitudinal data regarding the drop in board satisfaction from last survey to this is alarming. And the message from the survey comments, in addition to that, about the board are direct: dysfunctional, embarrassing, unprofessional board members with hidden agenda. This board is not performing its duty to govern. Staff comments said that the board displays behaviors that demonstrate a lack of respect for the role of a board and a lack of understanding bordering on disrespect for the critical difference between governance versus acting on specific interests. We are in the weeds often, and the overwhelming theme of this staff feedback is tone it down, be purposeful in advancing a complex, highly performing, highly engaged District 41 while working professionally and respectfully with the superintendent. But the most disappointing piece of feedback that I read was to learn that the public behavior of some participants at board meetings, which is quoted, has deterred people from moving to Glen Ellyn in a conversation that this person had with a real estate agent. Is this the outcome that any member of this board or the school community wants? I believe in and support our students, our teachers, our staff members, and our superintendent, and I do believe that every member of this board, in our own way, is wanting this to be a high-performing district. It is how we're going about it. Maintaining the standard of performance in District 41 is an all-in effort, and it starts here at this table. I personally commit to take this direct and blunt feedback and work to adopt the changes expected by the staff and community. It has to be a commitment by all 7 board members. Our first step by board policy is to participate in our board governance evaluation, which is actually an assessment through the IASB where we take an online tool about us, about our work together, and about our work within the community. That evaluation can be scheduled for May as it stands right now. So I look to get support to do that from the board. So thank you.
I wanted to add something earlier, and I was interrupted, but, you know, our role as board members is to hire the superintendent, and I know Paul saw some significant decreases, too, and he had a lot of comments as well. So I think as a board, I mean, we're talking about focusing just on the comments on us. I mean, I think we need to be focusing on that feedback as well. And I'm
absolutely, and we're in the midst of his annual evaluation right now.
But I would encourage the public, I mean, read all of the comments.
Absolutely.
About the board,
absolutely.
The superintendent, all of the staff comments. I mean, the staff, there's, I don't have any pages because it's numbered oddly, but I mean, the staff and the parents, students,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of feedback, and there's many different opinions, but I think that I feel like we're focusing on one aspect, but there's other areas of the survey where we saw a decline that is our job as board members that we also need to be focusing on. And there's
I don't disagree.
We're negative in that area too. So
mm-hmm.
I don't think we should just be focusing on one thing.
No. Not, but it does start here, so we can help to improve some of that as well. You know, it cascades down from that. All right.
Eric, I
Kirk, go ahead.
I'll continue to do my job as a board member. Stephanie and I were elected to be fiscally responsible, to hold people accountable, and be transparent. If there are negative comments about me individually that are in there, I have no problem with those being posted. I have a business in town. My family, I feed my family based on my reputation. It's okay that people have an opinion about me. Some of them they may not like, and those that know me know that I won't care about that, because I will continue to do what the voters I told them I would do, which was to hold staff accountable. Tonight we heard about multi-age going away. Wind time was taken away. We had administrators that are here, minus Dr. Gordon, who sold this to us. And I would disagree with Patrick that it was properly vetted. We could disagree about that all day, so we won't get into that. But they have been asked by us, the voters, to make sure that we hold them accountable through data. And we've done that. We had a superintendent in our annual report, and I've asked him several times, and I state this. He put out in the annual report to the taxpayer that our students are performing better than they ever have. That is not a factual statement. It's just not true. Do I feel fun? Is it fun for me to call our superintendent out about that right now? No. There's nothing fun about it. I could be like board members in the past and just sit here. It's easy to just sit here and not comment about it, go home, go to bed. I'll be up all night thinking about it. I'll get up and go to work tomorrow. I don't get paid for this gig. But the reality is that statement was made. And what we heard tonight is we're taking things away because we're not performing like we should be. That's a fact. So on the one hand, we make a statement that's false from our superintendent. And then less than 9 months later, we're saying that we're taking these things away. And again, I commend them for taking them away. But it wasn't a true statement. We oversee $53 million. And I read from teachers, it's not all about money. Look, I have a teacher that's, my wife is a teacher in this district. I've known teachers for 25 years. I also know, and I've watched for 25 years, I've watched initiatives on spending money. Nobody follows up on them. And it's lots of money that goes out. Nobody looks back at it. Nobody evaluates it like we're being told as a board evaluate these comments. We don't evaluate anything. We've asked for that evaluation. It makes people uncomfortable. Of course they're going to go ahead and have some negative comments about that. We're asking tough questions. We're making tough decisions. We're asking for tough decisions to be made. They're not comfortable. They're not comfortable decisions at all. At all. So does it make me feel happy? Am I glad? Am I giddy about it? No. But I feel, and I ran, so that those things could be answered. And so, for me, is there some area to look at? Sure, I always reflect on those areas. Do I think this is a disaster? No, it's not. When you are employing people, and you're making decisions, and you're making them accountable, and you're making them uncomfortable, sometimes they don't like you. That's just the way things happen. And you know, I'm sorry if they don't, but I can tell you this much. The teachers in this district were able to speak. And they were able to speak now because of two board members. We can argue about that. We had board members that didn't want to survey the staff, and now all of a sudden they want to survey the staff. That's an interesting thing to me. I mean, we don't really care what the staff thinks, but now that we've got some data that we think we can use, we'll go ahead and ask the staff what we think, and we'll go ahead and pontificate about it. And that's beautiful. So that's and I let you guys speak. I didn't say anything. I let Dean go on. I let Patrick go on. So that's the way I feel about it. And you know what? Hey, if you know me, you know me. I'll stay on my ground. You don't have to like me. I'll say hello to you in the hallway. You can talk about me in however fashion you want. You can name me however you want to. But I made a promise to the voter. I'm going to carry that promise out for 3 more years, and that's what you got for me. So if you don't like it, I'm sorry. There are a lot of people, I can tell you, there are a lot of teachers that I'm friends with. They like me. So
that's
my comment.
Joe, Dean, Drew, anything to close on this?
Go ahead. I just want some clarification from Dean. Are you recommending that we read these comments into the public record? Is that what I understand?
Within 3 minutes.
he.
Do you want me to answer that question?
Go ahead.
Yes, I do, and I think there's a really good example of exactly what I'm talking about just now. What we did is we said, I'm going to make the tough decisions. Kurt just said he wants to talk about the tough things. That's not what these comments say. These comments talk about being rude. These comments talk about being disrespectful, verbally abusive. Nobody, I don't believe the people of Glen Ellyn elected any of us to be verbally abusive to each other. I don't believe the people of Glen Ellyn elected any of us to be rude to one another. I don't believe that the people of Glen Ellyn would like us to be bullies. I think we all care deeply about the school district. I think we all care deeply about the funding. We've been working on that. We just got rid of all the portables in here out of the elementary school without going to a referendum because we care about money. We care about funding. That's not what these comments are about. These comments are about disrespect. These comments are referred to this as a circus-like atmosphere. This has nothing to do. I don't believe that the people of Glen Ellyn elected us to be in a circus-like atmosphere. I don't think that's what this is. So that's why I thought these should be read into the record. I'm fine not reading them into the record tonight because we've already used a lot of these good people's time up here. But I want people to go directly to the comments from the staff about the board. And if your people, there's a lot of very intelligent people in this community, go ahead, look at the longitudinal data. There's going to be an area that sticks out that's red that is way different than every other number. And there's only one difference between last year and this year, and that's we had an election. Elections have consequences. I want people to understand that the elections have consequences, and you need to understand the consequences that you make when you vote. And that's what I want people that are being streamed in here to understand.
And some people are elected vetted, and others got elected unvetted. So Mrs. Clark and I were vetted more than anybody sitting up here.
Others just got voted because there wasn't another. Joe, you may comment.
This is exactly my
point about the board needing to come together to do this work together. This is exactly what I'm saying. Okay.
All right. I'm going to keep mine to the survey.
Thank you.
First of all, I do believe that if history speaks correctly, we all wanted this survey. We were talking about October was our initial date. We made changes to it, so I know it was stated that we didn't want the survey, but we always had thought we were going to try to do it in this October, November time frame, and then with questions adding, and I think we're all good ideas, and we decided to do it in January. That was as a group. It was actually professionally discussed, and discourse was very normal, at least in my profession, how we have discourse at meetings. So I think that was a group decision, not just two individuals at this board. The other thing, but overall, what's important is the data, and we have this data, and we have it longitudinally now. It may not be in the perfect school perspective, where we can norm it against other communities, other districts, but we do have it. And breaking it down and letting it go with the administration, with the principals at the building level, the principals are here, thank you for being here, that's important. Because this data does tell them things that it doesn't tell us. They are living it every day. We don't live it every day, but they do and they can do it. So for me, that's very important. I think I also agree, read all the data, read all the comments. There's lots of student comments, there's staff comments. None more important than any other, but I agree with everybody here. I think everybody says take it all in. Just a couple quick things, though, that I did want to point out, because the PBL thing was discussed here. When I read the PBL, this is just what I get, and I know it's a little different than what you had, Stephanie, but I look at something differently. There's one number that says, basically, get rid of PBLs, and that's 19%. So 81% is saying something else that's not return to traditional practice, no PBLs. They may be saying reducing it, they may say increasing it, and that's 8%, and then 29% says to maintain it. What's important is that other people read that, because that's my interpretation. Clearly, Stephanie has a different interpretation of that, as she stated. One other thing, yes, read comments about us. Read them about Paul. But I'm just going to say this. I do think, Kurt, I know you disagree, you stated it, Dean, I agree. We dragged Paul down. But I look at these numbers, they're still above 3, and some of them are above 4. But take that in with the comments. I think that is a combination. So for me, overall, I'm happy we took it. You know, reading them in the record would take forever, so I'm glad we're not doing that. But I do ask people out there, and the camera's right there, please read these when they become available. I do think they're important. I do think they're different about what decisions we make. Not everybody likes decisions we make. I mean, we talked about today of bringing, not having one-to-one if kindergarten, first grade, and maybe not second grade, maybe not third grade. Not everybody's going to like that decision, but it's fiscally responsible, and we're reviewing it, and I believe we're vetting it properly. But these comments aren't about decisions, and I do agree with you in that matter. They're about behavior. We control our behavior as a group. As a board, our decisions are voted on, 4-3, 7-0, 6-1, whatever it is. But as an individual, you control your behavior. And that's what we have to look introspective in, is how we can control it and act professionally. So, I'm going to do my best. That's what I'm going to try to do. I ask everybody, I'm there in May. I gave 3 dates. We need to talk about it. Because that is what we control individually. Decisions are based on votes. And that I understand. So that's it.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, seconds.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Paul, why don't you wrap this up and we'll get on to the next item.
I know there's been a lot of negative pieces here, but I hope people will go back and look at the schools and the parents. Holy cow. I know
that.
The Pollyanna and everybody, you know, you should bring other negative things to the table. My God, look at these scores. We have improvement across the board from our parents and our staff at each of the schools on different topics. There's a lot of positive here too.
Mm-hmm.
I know there
That's
are
agreed.
Issues, and I got my own issues. I mean, it's right there too. I own those pieces. Reaching out to staff in the next few weeks, I'm going to be going out to all the buildings to have an opportunity with the staff for extended periods of time to hear. You know, I think I've heard about all the major concerns, but maybe there are others that I haven't. So I'm going to be out there with staff and listening. It's just going to be me. Out there with staff, and staff can choose to come individually. They can just choose to come in small groups, or they can come in masses to talk to me about those pieces, because I recognize those are some pieces, and those were some of those comments, too, that kind of helped refine it. Is he doesn't know all those major concerns. Again, I thought I did, and obviously there are some pieces out there. But I think there's some really positive things here about each of our schools that are occurring, that our parents are saying, that our staff are saying, that we continue to improve. So I know sometimes I'm Pollyanna. I like to see the green, and I just...
But it's there.
It is there. Mm-hmm. And that is our principals, our assistant principals, our teachers, our staff, our custodians, making a difference every day for our kids. You know, and at the end of the day, we've got to remember, we've got a pretty great district here. I know sometimes you wouldn't recognize that coming every other Monday, but this is a pretty great district. And can we continue to improve? We can. We absolutely can. We've got a pretty dang great place here. So I just want to thank the parents and all the staff members who gave us a tremendous amount of feedback. And know for my part, I'm going to keep getting better as a superintendent, so I appreciate it. And Bill, I appreciate your time here tonight.
Bill, thank
I
you.
Really do. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
You driving back tonight?
I am.
Okay. Safe drive.
Later, I'm going to get a hotel.
Okay, safe drive.
Thank you,
Bill. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, and if everybody else wants to, you know, if anybody's feeling like they need, not staff. I had a few eyes back there looking at me. This is the right time. Well, my administrative team, sorry. Yeah, have a, just maybe like 2 minutes.
Let's take a 2 minute break.
Just a 2 minute break. Just let people kind of come and go. Cause
okay.
I can use
we will be back.
The restroom.
Don't leave the live stream. All right, thanks very much. We just took a brief break. Paul
just
wants
for,
to make a clarification.
Yeah, just for clarification, the only comments that we don't post are the student comments. We didn't last time. Nancy came up and reminded me again. I think that's really important. That's an internal that will be shared with principals and those pieces. But last time we didn't post the student comments either.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. All right. Under discussion items, we have item A, board member request to disaggregate school perception survey comments. And I just want to set the context for this. A request to change the format for how staff survey verbatim comments are summarized has been made by Stephanie and then additionally by Kurt. I myself, Dean, Patrick, Joe, Drew, responded to the emails that board members were blind copied on about this, that we either disagreed with it, did not agree to do that, or that the request should be put on the board agenda tonight, which is why we have it on. Board members have received and read all the emails between Dr. Gordon and Stephanie and Kurt regarding this request. The purpose of this discussion is to see what the consensus is among the board on this request. So I'm asking each board member to briefly summarize their position in order to provide direction to Paul. I know that Stephanie's been very articulate in her emails about the request and what it's for. So we want to get a sense of consensus on direction on this.
Is this further bifurcation?
Yes, further bifurcation. So by position.
Of the comments.
This is
from the staff.
Just the comments. Yeah.
Well, and could I,
go ahead and set context.
For everyone out there watching that may not really know what we're talking about, give a little history. I was looking to have specifically the comments about the superintendent and the board broken down by staff position, not to the detail that we have it on the survey, but by admin, heavy teachers, elementary teachers, and then other, to use for purposes to be able to mostly evaluate Paul, because there's both negative and positive comments, and we're trying to do his evaluation right now. To me, it was important to know where the comments were coming from. Were positive comments all coming from admin? Were all the negative comments coming from teachers? Would that show that we have a good relationship with admin, but maybe there's a disconnect with how that's translated to the teachers? Maybe the negative and positive comments were a mix for both, and so maybe some people like Paul, some people don't. I don't know. I have no idea where the information was coming from, so that's why I was looking for it just for internal purposes for the board. I by no means wanted to compromise the anonymity of the survey. The survey the last time, I'm not sure why it wasn't done this time, but the survey last time, we broke slides and data points down by position. We specifically reported out what K-1 teachers thought, 2, 3, 4, 5, in regards to multi-age and specialization. So I guess in my mind, I didn't really see that I was asking for something that we hadn't broken down before. I didn't feel I could do a true evaluation without knowing where the comments came from. I know that...
We didn't do that on the comments last year.
Not on the comments, but I guess position is a data point that we use to break out data.
Quantitative.
So no, it has never been used for comments before, so I know that was a new request. And, I by no means wanted this to become controversial. That GIA, I know we've had an email from the GIA president saying that they've heard from some staff that if we were to break out the comments, that they may not want to take surveys in the future. And, maybe I need to speak with them to try to get an understanding. I wasn't trying to cause some big controversy with all of this. I've even thought in looking through the staff comments, just their comments on engagement and communication. There's some great comments in there, both from the positive and the negative. And some staff do put their building, like at Hadley or at Churchill or whatever, but some don't. And they have feedback that I would think at an administration level. I don't think that has to be public but at an administration level, you would maybe want to know, break that by building, break the staff comments by building to just further analyze that data. And I don't think that compromises the confidentiality of the survey. It's being able to use your data, which is the comments, which are unfiltered, they can say whatever they want, and truly be able to do something valuable with it and see where the improvements are needed. That's really all I was trying to do with this. I wasn't trying to pick out certain teachers of certain grades. I said I didn't even want it down to the different elementary levels. I just wanted elementary overall. So, I wasn't trying to make it controversial. I asked for data. It all of a sudden became that I had to discuss it and get board approval, which concerns me because when we ask for data, we shouldn't be getting board approval to ask for data. If there's a concern about proceeding, then maybe we need to have a conversation with GIA or whatever. Maybe that needs to be done, but I don't think it's something that needs to have board approval. Maybe we need to say, hey, maybe we need to talk to GIA leadership and see what they think about this, because is this going to impact how we conduct surveys in the future? that I'm okay with if we want to do that, but this, well, as a board, we don't think we should do that. We don't agree with your request. That's what bothers me about this, and I don't want to, I'm not trying to sit here to convince you to let me have access to the data. If there's concerns, I'd like to address them, but I felt there was a purpose for it. I still feel that there's a purpose for it.
Here to look at. It's not approval. It's consensus. So what the request is to direct the superintendent to change what the original plan was for the comment disaggregation. And so it is direction to the superintendent, and the board does that as a board, not as individuals. So that's why an email came in from a board member that said, "Put this on the agenda. We'll talk about it."
But that's not true.
I mean, we asked Bill Foster tonight to break down the data differently. It's
right.
It's actually Eric. I disagree because you're running down a slippery slope here. And I asked for information tonight. I asked for further information from Mike in our comments at finance. Joe asked for additional information. When you're asking for information, and you can get a report given from staff, and we can say, okay, can you break this report down further? I'd like to see this, like what Mr. Curry commented about the access scores that I still haven't received yet 2 months later from staff. We can ask for that. We have every right to ask for that. When it's on policy, then we build board consensus or we vote on it. When it's about money, we do that. But when it's about collecting data or information, we're elected by the taxpayer. We have access to all information as individual board members. The board can't block board members from that. And if you do that, then every piece of information that any board member asks, are we going to come? I mean, Mr. Elger already talks about the board meetings being too long. We're going to then bring these pieces, every piece of information that a board member wants, and we're going to build consensus to direct that. I'm sorry, but the superintendent was asked to give us additional information about something. It was not breaking confidentiality. I mean, this is just ridiculous in terms of that we're breaking. I mean, we've broadened it so much that nobody could narrow down who's saying what. And Stephanie's outlined why we requested the information. But the superintendent should have complied with it. I mean, it's information.
Well, clearly there was disagreement about
that. He didn't want to give us the information. He doesn't have that right to decide whether he doesn't or does. He has the obligation to provide information to the elected representative. If you don't do that, then you absolutely have you've got all sorts of discourse. Then you are blocking people that were elected from access to information, and that is a serious problem.
Well, let's hear what the other board members have to say.
I'm the one who requested it.
Go ahead, Joe.
On the board agenda, and I'll just read what I wrote to Paul regarding the idea of breaking down the survey responses and comments, which is different than before. It's a serious request and one that should not be taken lightly.
Joe, can you speak up just a little bit?
Yes, I'll give you the microphone, too.
Yeah.
I'll start it over. Regarding the idea of breaking down the survey responses and comments, is a serious request and one that should not be taken lightly. This request should be made within the public forum, i.e. at the board open board meeting, if for nothing else, then for the transparency that this matter deserves. Rather than using threats and intimidation, I would ask that we have open professional discourse on the matter after the expert delivers his presentation to us on Monday. So thank you for putting on the agenda, and that was my request. Here's the thing. I do think it breaks confidentiality, because when you start breaking down the data and mining the data, there could be subgroups that have so few people in it that then those comments, which we didn't break down before, could be 6 to 6, 12 to 12, 18 to 18. It could be something like that. And yes, I agree, Kurt. You can't say this comment, if you went to the parents' comment, this is Kurt's comment. You wouldn't get to that if you broke it down by Lincoln parents. You wouldn't get to that. I understand that. But if you get to a small enough group, you could get darn close. And quite frankly, how people write, you could probably figure out pretty clearly who wrote a certain comment.
No,
but here's the thing that's important. Because when I looked at what I filled out the parent survey, and when I did, it speaks to your identity will be completely confidential. And I think when you mine it to a level where you have subgroups that are pretty small, you could get to that point. Now, I believe in the administrators, we're pretty small. So you ask to mine it down to that level. So I don't disagree with it. And then on regard to asking for data and having the full unfettered right to it, that sounds all and good, but the cost of getting that data could be quite expensive. And if it is expensive, then that becomes a board matter at some level. First of all, it's expensive because we're asking for slides, and we discussed that tonight. If we start asking for stuff, the school perspective bill will go up, and then we're spending taxpayer money. And we should determine at a board, is that the appropriate way to spend that money? You may say yes, I may say yes, five others may say no. So to me, it does need to come to the board when you're spending money. I also do think this, staying on topic of time-consuming requests, and I know you alluded to this before in our finance meeting, we do have to be careful because we have staff that needs to do their job of educating our kids. So at some level, we have to, if everybody makes the numerous requests, we could basically need to hire two people just to handle those requests. So I do think that when you're collecting data, there is a cost to it, and we do have to discuss when that cost becomes a level that's concerning. But in this case, I'm not going to stick to the cost part of what I just presented as my argument, but the confidentiality, I do think there is an issue there. There's comments in there that says right now that some of the teachers' comments, if I recall, was that some teachers aren't, one teacher said, some teachers don't give their honest opinion because they think you can break down and find and take the anonymity and throw it out and blow it out of the water. And that concerns me. So if we were to do this, the next survey, we're not getting any comments.
But they're putting that down because they're asked, and we've explained why we needed it, and that was a board decision. But they're worried about that because there's a link to your email, and then they are asked, are you a third-grade teacher at Ben Franklin? That's what they're concerned about. That's what that concern is. To say that it's about this concern is disingenuous.
No, I didn't align them. I just said there are already teachers who are concerned about the confidentiality. That's all I said. I wasn't aligning it to this request, so I apologize if I...
All right, Kurt and Joe, you've weighed in. Let's get some other voices.
Question. I mean, I feel like to streamline this conversation, I mean, obviously everybody but Kurt and I think that we shouldn't be breaking down the information. I mean, I we can all go through and everyone
Correct.
Can say why, but, you know, I think the big, my question, which I would like the board members to answer is, I understand, like, what Joe is saying, but what I'm saying is we haven't done a survey where we have obtained feedback about our superintendent specifically. The HumanX survey was not superintendent specific, even Five Essentials wasn't. This is one where you actually have specific feedback,
right,
on our superintendent, who is the only person in the district that we're responsible for. So I guess the question is, if you break it down in those buckets, and we are board members, and we are, you know, professional board members, have access to confidential information, isn't that information important to do our job as board members? To know, okay, were these comments coming from the admin? Were they coming from the teachers? I mean, there's no possible way to pinpoint who made what comments. I was just trying to say it's important to know where the feedback is coming from.
Okay.
I understand this question. So the question is, do you, yeah, so let's let people weigh in real quick.
I'll just answer real quick.
Go ahead.
And I understand your question. For me, Stephanie, it's those comments are there, and they have a magnitude that matters. And it's part of our review process. And the evaluation I did, I spoke about that. So I think that's important. But there is a confidentiality part here that I'm not willing to break just to get that part of the evaluation a little better. Should you use them? My opinion is yes, you should. Can you make certain assumptions on them? Certainly you could. I mean, when you evaluate, you're going to. These are staff, these are admin. You can do the best you can on that with the data you have at hand. But to break the confidentiality to get you more comfort level, that I'm not willing to do.
Thank you, Joe. Patrick?
I kind of see admin and the teachers kind of a hand in the glove, and Paul's role is to manage that as the superintendent. So to break it down, I think his communication model, I think, would probably be similar to administration and teachers. So I don't think breaking it down outside of the confidentiality is going to give us much more data. But I also look at, this, if we have governance in place today that has CIT and Team 21 and PK committees and councils and all of these kind of surveys. I think we have things in place right now that help us judge Paul in his role. I think I have the evidence in place and the structures are in place to give me the data from an external looking in. An internal looking internal is my relationship with Paul and what he delivers and the representation that he brings every 2 weeks. I think that those things that are in place right now outweigh any effort that we need to break that confidentiality clause for more data.
Okay.
Yeah, we put out a survey. We said to people that it was going to be confidential. They've already said they're having trouble with us. The last thing we need to do now is go back on that and say they're not going to be confidential. So I absolutely would not support breaking down the data any more than it is right now. I also think that as a board member, I guess I view it as I do not have a right to tell Paul what to do. I think the only time I have any right is when I vote yes or no on a motion in front of the board. I don't believe that as an individual board member, I can direct anybody. That's the way this position is described. That's the way it is taught. That is everything about the board. The only time we matter or have any power is when we vote as a unit. And that's what we're talking about here. We don't have the right to ask for things, and out of courtesy, we try to run everything through Paul, and if it's easy, a lot of times out of courtesy, he will provide us data. But certainly something like this, to say, Paul, go out, tell your staff this is a confidential survey. Whoa, they voted us pretty bad. Now I'd like to know, break it down as much as you can so I can go find out who that was. That is horrible. I would not do that.
Okay. Drew, go ahead.
You know, I thought about this a lot over the past week, and I'll give you my thoughts. My initial thought about this question is one about Board of Education access. And I'm in favor of having any board member have access to any information necessary to be well-informed and productive as a board member, so long as that board member follows the signed district code of conduct and governs their actions accordingly. However, I don't think this is the issue at hand. My next thought, maybe that's an issue of availability. And the information's not readily available. And creating that additional information would create an undue hardship to the staff. As I thought about that, I said, I don't think that's the issue at hand either. What I finally came to is, I think this is an issue of trust between the staff and the administration. I believe the nature and the terms of the initial survey was that of an anonymous survey. As such, there's an implicit reliance that the honest information within that survey not be disaggregated and broken down to the point that the responses could be reverse engineered. This is not what the survey participants were told about the survey initially. This is not what the survey participants would expect with honest responses to any anonymous survey. I'm not comfortable risking the confidentiality of any staff member that took the time to respond to an anonymous survey only to be compromised.
Thanks, Drew. I'll close this out saying that I, much of what I had made notes to myself to say has been clarified. But in response specifically to Stephanie's question about using information for the evaluation, this is not a compelling reason for me based on the, again, expectation of the staff. Any comment that I've gone through that I highlighted in order to write my evaluation already, I took at face value. It doesn't matter whether it's a first grade teacher or a staff member or somebody here in the central services office. Everything is whether positive or negative is taken as a whole with his goals, in improvement areas from last year to this year, as a measure of that as well, and then the direction of the district. So there's not a question whether or not they feel safe. We've already gotten an email from the GIA, Glen Ellyn Education Association co-presidents earlier today, stating that they've had staff members come to them with grave concerns about this. I think we need to listen to that. And as early as Friday, literally, 2 hours after the agenda was posted, I was received information from a staff member who said staff members are already talking about this and are concerned about it. So in lieu of that, and in lieu of the fact that this is direction from the board, we don't have consensus to move forward or spend the money to do it. As well. So I appreciate that. Thank you for bringing it to the board and having the conversation. And I think it's vital that the staff feel that they that their superintendent told them the truth. So thank you for that and the conversation.
I just want to say one thing, that I did not see it as compromising confidentiality, because we use position as a data point for reporting out on other areas of the survey. I understand how the comments could be different, but I don't want it to be construed that I want to break the confidentiality of the survey.
That.
I just see it as compromising that, because we use that data point to report out on other things. So.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that that information was released on a Friday. I talked to staff members today. They were not contacted by their union at all, so I'm not sure where that came from. In terms of that, so it's interesting. I'm not sure how the union had information and was able to do that, but to Stephanie's point, no one was asking for, was this an eighth grade teacher at Hadley? So we absolutely were not compromising. We didn't stand on whatever we want to, compromising any confidentiality. So, and I now go on record as saying this board does not have the ability to block access to information, and you've run a slippery slope doing that, and we'll certainly keep an eye on that with requests from other board members as they make them, because then we'll say that you're directing the, when you ask for additional information, that has now been construed, according to Mr. Elger, as a direction to the superintendent and should be brought to the entire board for consensus.
Well, I think a final point to that, Kurt, I think that we all know that Paul, in directing his staff, is very, very open to information. I have a stack of emails starting last year that I keep on a yearly basis of emails to and from the superintendent to any of the board, and it's this thick in terms of information requests, responses. So I don't think there's an issue of the superintendent responding or not responding to
information.
I didn't say
there was, but you can't pick and choose which ones that you want to respond
to. I think,
and this board doesn't have the ability to do that.
Well,
so sorry, but I disagree. So.
You're
on a slippery slope there.
Thank you. I disagree with that. Student fees, item B, 2016-17 student fees. Student fees must be set by the board so we continue to build the budget,
yep.
Right? As simple as that. Becky and Paul, you're going to facilitate this.
So it's been a while since we've had this conversation. It seems like months ago, and it maybe was. So it was. So we're back to the board looking for direction. Administration continues to stand by this recommendation for the fees. Becky, pieces that you want to add?
As your chief financial officer, if you recall, on February 8th, during the presentation of the financial projections, we showed you a base case less student fees.
Right.
It just, if you start taking away revenues without having concrete information about what our state and federal revenues may be next year, and or what the actual tax extension is going to be, you go down the path of reducing those funds as we've dedicated mm-hmm. them to capital projects, because that will, if you remember that one graph with the fund balances this way and the 25% line, you'll cross that at an earlier point. And I just couldn't sit here in good conscience and recommend that you do that. Student fees are a sensitive issue, no matter what district you're sitting in, because it's just going back up to your parents. I feel like I've been talking about student fees for the last 8 years, to be honest with you, because this was a topic almost every board meeting when I, for my 6 years in Park Ridge. So I understand your concerns, but my opinion hasn't changed in 8 years either. So, but it is for board discussion and board deliberation.
Thank you. Thanks, Becky.
Board members? So as you notice, we did make some adjustments based off of that December-January conversation. I know we had some like 75 cents pieces in there, so some things were adjusted. Mm-hmm. But we are looking for direction so we can bring this back in 2 weeks for action items.
I think I'm an outlier on this, but in the past I voted to support student fees each year when this has come up. I think we've talked about it and I voted to do that. I think it was Sam who thought that maybe we should eliminate the fees, and I took a tack much like Becky just talked about with, you know, you have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this year we talked about it. Kurt said something where I'm paraphrasing, but I think he said something about the fact that, you know, public education ought to be free. A free public education ought to be free. And so I'm not supporting this. I actually like that direction. I think that a public education ought to be free. And I think that these fees mount up to where they can become very significant for people. And when I looked at some of the survey data, the one thing that I did see was there was a lot of requests for more extracurriculars, more clubs, things like that. That's also going to mean that, you know, there'll be charges for that. And I think I'd rather get the kids involved in the clubs and the extracurriculars, and we'll figure out a way to pay for this somewhere else out of the budget.
So just let me push down a little bit. Are you saying just get rid of basic fees, or are you saying getting rid of the club, the sports, the kind of the activity fees, those activities that parents and children choose to participate in?
Yeah. So
all?
I realize this isn't going to be an agreement, but
no, that's okay. I just want to make sure.
I think we should get rid of all of it.
Okay, so you're saying all.
All of it.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll go next.
Okay.
I disagree with you.
Yep. So I knew you would.
I think one, just to note for everyone out there listening and the audience here, we did change the activities fees. This is quite different.
Is it quite different?
And broken out. And I think this is an improvement. It's one club fee, it's one sport fee, and then you can have multiple sports, multiple.
So it's a one-time payment.
It's a one-time payment. Before we used to have, we were charging, and we determined after a while that we were charging so little for those, it was more to process it. So we kind of upped the sports fee a little and just made it one flat rate. So I'm in favor of that. I think that was a good change. I agree with Becky as far as the finances are concerned. I think that's a responsible approach to take. I think when you compare it to the feeder districts, I mean, other people are charging more, other people are charging less.
Mm-hmm.
You start doing the averages, I think we're too far off. So that doesn't mean just because your neighbors are doing it, you need to do it. I understand that. But it is data that comes into the decision that I think we should make and what I think is important here. And just the other note, if people, you know, people have, there are some of our students, some of our families who don't get charged this fee.
Right.
So it's not a fee for everyone.
Correct.
Yes. And that's the same for the activity fee, too. It's based on a need basis, and I don't know the exact formula, but it goes along with free and reduced lunch, I believe. So that is just the fact that I want to throw out there. So I'm supporting the recommendation. I think it's far better than what we've had in the past because of the changes we've made in the club fees and the sports fees. And I actually think it's easier to understand than what we had before.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
Hi, Erica.
Kurt, yeah.
I'm going to change my position a little bit on this from what I articulate. I'm going to stay. I do not believe that we should be charging student fees. It's a public school. It's less than 0.5% of our budget. I will not be you know, we can talk about, I've been listening, I've been sitting out there for how long listening that the state of Illinois is going to cut our budget. They have not done it. They haven't increased it, but they haven't cut it. They don't give us a large portion of it anyway, so in the end, they are going to continue to get what they can to us, because otherwise they're gonna have taxpayers upset saying, hey, we're spending income tax that's going to the state and we're getting none of it back. So to me, that's kind of an idle threat. I don't even mean it that way, but that's the way, you know, I look at it. I think these fees are just a way around the tax cap. When the district doesn't know what to do, they just be the parents. And there's a reason there's a tax gap there that is how we generate revenue. When you want to look at it, that's what it is. It's generating revenue is what the tax is. So I'm not going to change my position. I'm not going to vote in favor of continuing on with the fees. The activity fee is where I'm going to change my opinion a little bit. I actually talked to somebody over the last couple of weeks who is somebody that was not a person of means and has actually told their children that they would not have them do things because they couldn't afford to do it. And it was too, I'm not going to use the term humiliating, but it was something they didn't want to do. They didn't want to ask the district for help, even though it's anonymous. Mm-hmm. And so their child didn't participate in something because of that. And for me, when you look at our activity fee, it's such a small portion of our budget that we should absorb that. And when we talk about staff doing work, well, you know what? When they're collecting the activity fee, it's one less thing we'll have to do, so we'll get some economy of scale out of that, that they won't actually have to process activity fee checks. So when we vote on it, I'm going to vote to eliminate both.
So eliminate both,
yep.
Because we're not voting tonight, just so everybody knows, because we're going to have to come back with a recommendation based off this. Drew?
You know, I have to come down on the side of Joe. I'm in favor of the fees, and I'm not comfortable reducing fees without a stated plan to offset that with corresponding reductions in expense. It doesn't make sense to me to eliminate a revenue source and not supplement with a plan to cut a like amount somewhere else in the budget.
So you would stay with Joe's all fees?
I will.
Stay with this recommendation, I apologize.
I will support the recommendation.
Okay.
As submitted.
Other comments?
No, you're good. Patrick?
Right now I'm not changing my position. I don't think I'll be supporting this. From the fees perspective, they haven't changed in 8 or 9 years. And I don't know what the rationale is of $56 or $75. I'm not against fees. I just don't know how these fees are calculated and maintained. And you haven't changed it in 8 years. To me, that's just bad policy. It's bad practice, not policy, bad practice. I wish that maybe I would be in favor of separating the technology and insurance fees, because I think that is something that I could agree to, but as it's bundled now, I probably will not, unless this changes, be supporting the fees.
Do you support club fees, sports fees? Because of that second?
Yeah, that second.
Yeah, so I'm hearing definitely no on basic fees. And then...
If it was bundled this way, I would say no.
The whole bundle, you wouldn't say no, but if you said... club fees down to technology fees, that could be something.
I can vote for.
Okay.
We had a conversation about it. So we had a conversation and a rationale for this.
Okay.
My turn.
Your turn.
Just a quick question. So I'm looking at the revenue report. And we have on there like calculators, assignment notebooks. That's not included in any of this, correct? Like those are... separate things.
Under the basic fees?
Yes.
Correct.
Right, so we're not talking about any of that. So I guess I'm going to agree with Dean and Kurt on this. you know, when we were talking about 0.4% of our budget, when we talked about TRS payments, you know, kind of the argument there, what the argument, which was the same amount or similar to the same amount, our reasoning there wasn't, it was actually, it was a small dollar amount, but it was the impact to the staff, and that we would look at our budget, look for other ways to make cuts. And in my mind, you know, not collecting fees, it's almost, it's going to force us to look at where we need to make cuts. You know, Becky's presentation, which I appreciated, that outlined, you know, where we would be if we didn't collect fees, it didn't account for if we had made comparable budget cuts to those fees, how that would impact us. And I think we can figure out a way to make the offsets to make up for it. I mean, I'm even curious what percent of our student population would pay the fees, but that's more just out of curiosity, and it wouldn't really change my decision, but I think it's...
Would that include all fees, Stephanie?
Just the basic student fees. I was just, you don't even have to.
Okay.
I'm just speaking. In my mind, I'm curious about that, but I don't...
You don't need it.
It's not going to change my decision,
okay.
So I don't want to make you another round.
And you're saying all fees, right? I just want to make sure.
All fees, I mean, the activity fees... I could actually be okay with charging the activity fees because I can see a kid making a choice, like, well, we've made a choice to do that. But in reality, I mean, I think we're collecting like $12,000 a year on that, which is really not a lot. And I think Kurt's point that he made is a good one. And if I know, you know, I have a kid going to West next year, and one of their huge things, they have a huge activity fair. And they get kids in there, and they tell kids, we want you to do two activities because it's been shown to, you know, promote your performance in school. And I don't know if West charges fees or not. I'm not trying to compare in that regard. But if maybe this would help if you eliminated the activity fee, and maybe it would help some kids who aren't doing activities actually participate because that fee wasn't there, and it's really a minimal amount that it's impacting, that I would be in favor of eliminating it for the positive that could be happening. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Okay. I probably a little bit more thinking to do about this, but just thinking about Glenbard West, they similar to what we did in terms of changing some of the fee structure, that $40 and you can do as many sports as you want, you know, at Hadley. Glenbard West went to a single athletic fee. It's $130 for the year, and it's for fall, winter, spring, if you're a two-sport athlete, three-sport. But that money makes a difference, you know, in the programs. And the way I look at this is, you know, when I was at the LEN meeting, I did a kind of a straw poll, just because there were so many assistant superintendents there, about what some of the direction is for their budgeting, just in general. But then specifically a few people said to me, we're internally not making any revenue decisions until we start to see, you know, what's coming down the pike. I don't disagree with you, Kurt, that the state of Illinois has been, you know, talks 800 different miles. But, you know, I would say that a few years ago when we... knew that payments were not going to come in on time, and that it was going to, you know, impact our budget. That budget plan that year cut 30% out of the budget, not 10 or 15 like other area districts were doing. So we are a district that is conscious of wanting to get ahead of it. And so I'm glad that the finance committee did the work that they did to shore up these costs. I'm glad that we just have the one sports fee. But I know certainly for band and orchestra that this money makes a difference in terms of rentals and equipment and that type of thing. So you have a child who joins but doesn't have the trumpet, and then we can provide for that along with MEF, which does a huge amount of fundraising. So my inclination is to not make any changes. On May 1st, we have a new assistant superintendent for finance and facilities coming in, and she may take a look at this and say, here's a way where we can cover some of these technology costs or whatever, and then we can, you know, there can be some other thoughts around it. But my sense is to stay where we are, but want to have this conversation with her when she joins up. And I respect, Becky, the number of years you've been having this conversation and your experience with it, which is, while it seems like a small amount of money, when you have a budget that's tight, anyway, every dollar makes a difference. And I don't want to be touching classrooms or that type of thing. So more to come on this. Right?
All right.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
With speaking to the state and the grant and the funding and everything that come to that, would we be able to have a more frank discussion with our community that says we're now cut $2 million, $4 million from state funding or whatever it is, and so now we're going to be, as much fiscal tightening as we've done, we are now forced to create a basic fee. And I think this is we're not saying yes or no till the end of time, right? We have the ability next year to say things have gotten so bad from the state funding perspective that we're going to be forced to charge a fee to help facilitate some of that conversation, and we are able to vet that out, and we can have a formulaic discussion that says, you know, K through eight student reduction of state fees or state grants was 3%. Mm-hmm. So we need that to come from somewhere, because without cutting to the bone, we need to create a fee, and that's mm-hmm. something that we can have. So
what are you saying? Make a decision not to include fees, but should there be some significant shift from the state, say two of the scenarios actually come into play, then the Finance Committee would discuss that first and then bring to the board some recommendations that with the superintendent. Certainly that's a possibility, yeah.
It's not just the budget building that this would be helpful to know, right, one way or the other. It's also preparing for the student billings that go out.
Right.
Right.
And that's a lot of prep work on the front end. So.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I fully understand that the decision that we make in 2 weeks or when we vote on this will impact next year. But we can have that following conversation in October, November when we're building the budget. And we know that, you know what, the state funding stayed the same. So we'll go one more year without those basic fees. Or, you know what, we were reduced our state funding plus 3%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's when we say, okay, we need to have a heart-to-heart conversation with ourselves. Is have we done as much as we could in fiscal finance, fiscal forecasting to capture that loss, and now we're forced to create a fee mm-hmm. that is substantiated by financials. That's all I'm saying.
I will just tell you my other experience to tell you, once you take the fee away, it's really hard to bring it back.
That's good though, right?
It can be.
For some people, right? but then I think you could stand behind that conversation that says, you know, this money has gone away, these reductions have done, this community, because of the state representatives that forced us into a conversation that says we need to bring these back.
We could have the conversation. I think that's a challenging one, but
well,
yeah.
Erica, you're the one that says we have a budget conversation every year.
Yeah, well, so that's what we're doing right now.
I know, but it would be part of the budget conversation each year. Mm-hmm. And if the state cuts funding, which I don't think they're going to do, but if they said they were going to cut it $4 million and it was doom and gloom, well, then you have an argument to say maybe we have to put some of this revenue back into place. So,
mm-hmm.
And I agree with Stephanie. The only way that we're going to start to see some cuts around here is to decrease the revenue. So.
Okay. I'm sorry, I had a question.
Sure.
I see the technology insurance piece on here. Are we still, based on the discussion at Finance Committee, I didn't know if the insurance is going to be part of, the insurance for Hadley is going to be part of the budget that Mike put together.
It is. So he has to pay for the
I did build that into the budget.
The expense, and this would be the revenue coming back. But he has to build that into to the budget itself.
What about for the elementary school? Because we're saying we don't need.
Yeah, we weren't going to.
So we don't.
That. Oh, I got you. I see what you're saying.
Insurance is at, four or five levels.
So we wouldn't even have that in there under the fees.
I mean, that's the one. The one fee that I would support is if, if there's an agreement with parents at Hadley that their student is going to remove their Chromebook from the property,
mm-hmm.
that they have to buy insurance. That's one that I guess I'm...
Okay.
That's a pass-through. That's a substantiating. That's, we're not
right.
subsidizing. It's
but I don't know
it's
that...
It's a usage.
That, but I think that's one that I can Okay. I understand that one of all three. But the other thing I wanted to say, I guess more a comment than a question, to Erica's point about how band orchestra and choir need those fees, and I would completely agree with that, but my logic isn't you eliminate the fees and then you cut the budgets of those departments. My logic is we eliminate the fees and we look at our, you know, we know right. what funding that department needs, regardless of if it came from a fee or if it comes from somewhere else. Do they still need that funding, and are cuts needed elsewhere? I'm not suggesting we cut the sports department's budget, the music department's budget. I'm suggesting we look overall.
Yeah.
Like they still need that money, but maybe it needs to come from somewhere
right.
else.
Yeah.
So I just want to be clear on that.
Yeah, and one clarification too: the supplemental pay budget is built separate from fee structure, or do these get included
yeah.
in some of that?
It's separate.
It's separate.
It's
that's
separate.
What I thought.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify that. Okay.
It's separate.
Because that's a yeah. That's a budget that's already built.
That comes a small with. Portion yeah. that offset those costs.
So this is going to come back to us on the 21st.
Okay. Just
we want to put that together.
So when you come back on the 21st, you're going to modify it. Are you going to have it as this, and then somebody's got to give two alternatives?
Probably, you know, I've been thinking about that as I'm sitting
yeah,
here. Probably two alternatives, quite honestly. Yeah, yeah, I think we've come with this recommendation, but also a recommendation over here to do basically what I've heard is there's some interest in board members to continue the club fees, the sport fees, the band, and the Hadley tech fee. So I may bring you a hybrid.
You never know.
That's why I want to keep with. I'm going to keep with the current recommendation. That's exactly right.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you guys for thanks for the feedback.
Okay, action items. Superintendent recommendations. 2016-2017 school calendar. May I have a motion to approve the 2016-17 school calendar as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All right.
Go ahead.
2 weeks is a really long period. Almost 3 weeks is a really long Christmas break. We line this up with...
Why is it 3 weeks?
It's 2 weeks.
It's 2 weeks.
It's
yeah.
just 2 weeks.
Same. Yeah.
Oh, it's 3 weeks.
Yeah. Wow. We got ourselves. No, just
I was going to say, what?
That's lined up with West, right?
Yes,
correct.
This is exactly lined up.
Correct.
We
anything
good?
Else?
I have no problem with the calendar. I just put my plug in it. Like to make sure in the future, look to try to maybe get it out there earlier.
Yeah.
Well, again, we're waiting on a second conversation Glenn Barr West is having to try and get a skeleton in place at least. So, with the known. All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark? Yes. Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Item two, the approval of transfer of funds from the O&M Fund to Capital Project. Earlier tonight, a public hearing was held to gather testimony on permanently transferring funds from the O&M Operations and Maintenance Fund to the Capital Project Fund. May I have a motion to approve the administrative recommendation to transfer a total of $1,652,278 to the Capital Projects Fund for the elementary school additions as presented.
Motion. Second.
Okay. Motion and second. Discussion.
Eric, I just want to make a comment.
Sure.
And I've said this before, but a previous board entered into this agreement, so we need to make this payment. But it wouldn't have been how I would have chosen how to do it. So I'm in kind of a precarious situation. I think all construction projects should be voter backed. They should be brought to the voter to approve them or not approve them. So from that standpoint, I don't agree with it, but I also understand payments. We've entered in a legal agreement with payments. So.
All right, thank you. Anything else?
I can help with her on that.
All right, thank you, Stephanie. Mrs. Moak, should I read the resolution into the record or will it be attached?
It will be attached.
All right, thank you. Anything else? Roll call, please.
Mr. Buckles.
Present.
Mrs. Clark.
Present.
Mr. Elder.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Borchinski.
Yes.
Mr. Nelson.
Yes. Okay. In November 2015, the board approved the annual summer capital project plan presented by the administration. These projects then take place during the summer of 2016. The following action items are for bid packets that were required for several of the projects and that require board approval. So item three is the 2016 summer capital project bid for the Benjamin Franklin Cubbies. May I have a motion to approve the administrative recommendation to award the base bid of $31,892 to the Carroll Seating Company for the Ben Franklin student locker replacement with cubbies as presented.
Can I read that and then go back?
Okay, and so would you, all of you, as well.
Yes.
I might make as a side comment.
Yes.
Okay, so may I have a motion on the Ben Franklin Cubbies?
Motion, second.
Okay, motion and second discussion. Go ahead.
Cubbies.
Cubbies. Ben Franklin Cubbies. Replacement, student locker replacement.
And I apologize if I missed the finance committee. I was going to get there early enough. You guys went to that. But I was just more curious with the Cubbies, and I don't know if it was Forest Glen or Ben Franklin. Like our.
How about Dave give you a quick overview? I think it would be good for the whole board to hear.
Why the amount was so far
yep.
from the bid. That was,
yep.
That
no,
was
I think it's a good question.
Actually, we met with the vendor there twice and with an installer. They looked at both schools. They gave us a price for the removal and the installation. Then when it came to bid time, the bids were actually higher than what the pricing was given to us. And they told me that it was due to the disposal, the demolition, and then the installation of the wood blocking behind the metal lockers to receive the wooden cubbies was more money. So that's why their price was higher.
We still think even with the increased cost, it makes more sense to put in cubbies or replace the lockers with cubbies versus just repair the lockers because internally they're...
Yeah, especially at Ben Franklin, some of them are pretty old and the bottoms are rusted up. Forest Glen, too, there's a lot of hinge problems and, you know, interior rust. So we went over also the safety, you know, kids slamming their fingers in lockers or just the noise up and down the main corridors will totally be eliminated, you know, in the primary hallways.
Does that help, board?
Yeah.
This is more just but I know we brought it to finance tonight and then we're approving it tonight. Is that like typically how we do it?
On this one we brought it back to finance just so the finance committee heard Dave's piece because this is like step five now.
Yeah.
We are.
That's right.
Yeah, because these are bids that we did through the capital project approval that went through the three staff and then this evening and now.
Yes, here. Some of the projects, there was two that really just stand out, Churchill and the Cubby projects were a little bit higher, but the other ones were less. So we still have three projects remaining that were out to bid now for Churchill paving and Ben Franklin's bathroom and then the Hadley roof. And the Hadley roof, we're pretty sure, will be near 75 or under. And the other projects, we don't really know. We're hoping that it'll be close to that budget, but there's funds at Churchill that... we have for the paving that we'll be able to use from the construction in the project. So we do have some funds and some maybe some savings from another contractor on the back playground at Churchill. So when everything washes out, I think we'll be very close to or right on where we should be with the budget. So,
board okay with the Benjamin Franklin? Are we good to move forward to a roll call?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elter?
Yes.
Mrs. Bell?
Yes. 2016 Summer Capital Project Bid. This is for Forest Glen Cubbies. May I have a motion to approve the administrative recommendation to award the base bid of $58,558 to the Lowry McDonald Company for the Forest Glen student locker replacement with cubbies as presented. Mr. Ellis and Mr. Bochinski. Okay, discussion?
Dave, is there anything to add on this one?
No, they're really
very similar.
Just separate them in case you wanted to pull out projects, but it's the locker
same.
Removal and the blocking.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Roll call?
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckholz?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Summer Capital Project 2016 bid, Benjamin Franklin ADA Playground. May I have motion to approve the administrative recommendation to award the base bid of $45,378 to the Kenneth Company for the installation of the ADA equipment, play panels, omni-spinner, concrete curbing, and poured in-place surfacing for the Ben Franklin Playground Project as presented.
Motion.
Second. Okay. Discussion. Straightforward. I mean, no, nothing special about this, right?
Nope.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Roll call.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckholz?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. A 2016 Summer Capital Project bid for Churchill Playground Equipment. May I have a motion to approve the administrative recommendation to award the base bid of $123,068, the PIP surfacing alternate bid of $31,527, for the total bid amount of $154,595 to the Kenneth Company as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
I just had a question on this. Didn't Churchill just get some new playground equipment? So as part of this moving new equipment?
We relocated the one big set all the way to the north of the asphalt playground area. One set was removed and is being stored for reinstallation as part of this project. And then the oldest set that was, I think, 1999, yeah, that one was just torn out and got rid of because it didn't meet any of the new CPSC guidelines.
Okay. Good question. Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Buckle.
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Rochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. 2016 Summer Capital Project bid for Hadley Rock Locker Retrofit. May I have a motion to approve the administrative recommendation to the bid of $148,647 to Monarch Renovations for the Hadley Locker Retrofit Project, including 1,472 lockers with a single point latch, Zephyr locks, and painting as presented.
Second.
Mr. Rochinski, Mr. Elger. Discussion? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Okay, closure of bank accounts. During the presentation of the audit to the Board of Education in January, the auditor noted that multiple banking institutions District 41 uses and reconciles. Currently, the district has accounts at MB Financial, U.S. Bank, Illinois Funds, and in the Illinois School District Liquid Asset Fund. MB Financial is the bank where all cash is deposited and all accounts payable and payroll checks are processed. The transfer of these funds to MB Financial will allow the district to use its money for cash flow purposes. To streamline the banking process, the administration recommends that the district close the four bank accounts at U.S. Bank, Illinois Funds, and transfer the funds to MB Financial. Two accounts are employee fund related for Section 125 employee health care and dependent care accounts. One account is for the deposit of corporate personal property replacement taxes. The funds continue to accumulate $4.1 million, earning less than 0.2% on a monthly basis. MB Financial currently is paying a fraction of a percent more. And the final account was used for the District 41 self-funded insurance account, but has been a standalone account, so and we've not been self-assured, so we'll pull that out. So may I have a motion to accept the closure of the four bank accounts as described by the administration?
Motion.
Second.
Any discussion?
I just have one question about this. Does MB Financial have any, even a branch within the district? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know, but I assume so since all of our banking transactions...
I
don't either.
I was just curious. I mean, maybe it's a. I agree with closing these accounts now, but in the future, maybe we could take a look and see if we could. You know, it doesn't have to be one. Mm-hmm. Maybe a bank.
I'm just trying to streamline what we have now.
MB is at front at the tracks on the south side on West Street, across the street.
But not within our district.
No.
Local, but not necessarily just where we're. Yeah.
Maybe that's a broader discussion.
I think there has been
some business within our.
I know that we have discussed that when we've looked at opportunities to use local businesses. So,
closing these four bank accounts will make that a much easier transition.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I just was curious about that, and I could have emailed. I just thought of it now.
All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bogusinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckel?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Let's see. Thank you, Becky. Thank you, Dave, very much. Items for future, for consideration for future agenda. As always, if you have something or you want to email, do that as well.
I had one, Erica.
Sure.
I'd like to, we have evaluated FGM, and the architect, and the district made a change. I think it's been a number of years since the, I shouldn't say, maybe the law firm has been evaluated, but it's been a law firm that we've used for a number of years. I do think it's good from time to time to take a look and see what the process is in terms of looking at the attorney. So,
sure. Well, we have a policy for that, and actually I think it works through finance. Drew, you were involved with that when you were chair of finance committee in terms of looking at the building a rubric for that. So I know that we have that in place.
Right.
So I wonder if it makes some sense to have that discussion in finance.
I think that was 3 years ago, 4 years mm-hmm. ago, that we sent an RFP.
What we did was not an RFP. It was an audit. So what the finance committee did at the time, if I'm remembering this correctly, was to create a rubric for an end of the year assessment, essentially. And I can't
remember. We did that for all of the financial services.
So right.
For engineer. We did that for legal.
Correct. Our auditor. Practice. Yeah. Exactly. So that is built in. So why don't we take a look at the policy on that?
Sure.
There should be information. There's policy on it and information on it because we have done it. Yeah.
Okay. So I can bring it back just in superintendent report in 2 weeks, just kind of the outline of it, what we do, how we do those things. Is that with the board?
Yeah. I think it's a great idea.
You good with that?
Okay. Vendors
for I'll add that to superintendent report.
Underneath that policy. Anything else? Again, you can email.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody else we should look at?
Yep, that was it. That should be.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do big ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're spending a lot. We spend a lot of money on that. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Other. The other.
I have one other. I was wondering if I was going to say something. I said I'm not going to. When we had the discussion earlier about the survey, and I appreciate Paul's closing on that, like to focus on the positive things that happened on the survey too. But I didn't appreciate the insinuation that the negative board comments are all basically because of two new board members, and that was basically what was said. And you can say the catalyst was getting two new members on the board, which changed the dynamics, but. I'm a person who's willing to reflect, and I will take all the feedback to heart, and I will look at, my actions and how I interact with other board members and things like that. But I'm not going to let my fellow board members try to basically publicly shame me into complying with everyone else's viewpoints. I know I ask a lot of questions, and maybe they're not questions that other board members think they should ask, but. I wasn't going to say anything, but I felt I needed to say something after I was basically accused of being the reason for all of the negative comments. So that's all.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. Right. This was the other, and I'm going to bring this to the president meeting, but I mentioned to Paul, in the Daily Herald, there was a review of a subdivision that's being built. It was approved for 8 homes, but it could go up to 12, and it's over by the country club. And so I'm always looking at those pieces because we never have a conversation with the village when subdivisions come up or that type of thing in terms of potential impact. So it's just something I think we need to always keep our eye on. And I don't know if there's been any conversation with Stacy Hulsberg or anything like that, they were...
Isn't that incorporated, though?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's called Country Club Estates, I believe. Yeah.
Well,
so
at the village level, they're either going to annex and become incorporated, or the village has to say otherwise if it's unincorporated, they're going to annex.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm always conscious when I read the newspaper articles about that stuff because it has an impact. When they talked about the apartments in downtown Glen Ellen, certainly that would have an impact on space and all that. So it's just an FYI. Maybe we can get some. We'll do a little investigating. All right. Upcoming meetings: Monday, March 21st, 2016, a regular board meeting again, 7:00 start time here at the Central Services Office. Monday, April 11th, 2016, regular board meeting, 7 p.m. Again, Central Services Office. All right, adjourn to closed session. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. Item B, collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. Item C, discussion of lawfully closed meeting minutes, whether for purposes of approval by the board of the minutes or semi-annual review of the minutes is mandated by Section 2.06. May I have a motion?
Motion. Second.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elter?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. The board will be taking action on the consent agenda when it returns from closed session. Returning to open session at 11:33 p.m. Thank you for waiting, those who have. For the consent agenda tonight, please note there's a blue copy of the February 22nd, 2016 minutes at your place. Mrs. Moe placed these here earlier tonight, noting an editing correction. It was just a note that she had put on here herself that she then removed. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
Mm-hmm. I would like to remove under other matters, destruction of closed session audio recordings.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. All right. So, anything else? Say again.
Go ahead.
With the rest of them, yes. I just want to make sure nobody else. Okay. So, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which now includes human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, internal transfer, resignations, resignation and retirement, item B, finance, facilities and operations, the school district payment order, February 17th, 2016 to March 2nd, 2016, and item C, other matters, the approval of board meeting minutes, February 20th, 2016, special committee of the whole meeting minutes, February 22nd, 2016, regular meeting minutes, February 22nd, 2016, closed session minutes, and the annual review of closed session minutes.
Motion.
Mr. Pachetsky?
Second.
Mr.
Ellis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Discussion? I'm sorry. Roll call.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Discussing hers.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Yes. Okay. Now, may I have a motion to approve the destruction of closed session audio recordings as presented?
Motion. Second.
Okay. Discussion.
I asked for this to be pulled not an issue specifically with this closed session audio recording, but when I was going through the agenda last night, I started thinking that for historical purposes, I was wondering why we destroy those audio versus just keeping them as we do for our open session, particularly because I don't feel our minutes are incredibly detailed about those meetings. And so I think it would be hard to, if you were to look back at the minutes, truly know what was was happening in the meetings. So for historical purposes, was going to suggest that we consider not destroying our closed session audio moving forward. I know policy 2.220 says after 18 months have passed since being made, the audio recording of closed meeting is destroyed provided the board approved. Number one is destruction, and number two, the minutes of a particular closed meeting. So it doesn't say that we have to destroy it. It says that we have to approve destroying it. The way I read it, I guess maybe that's just been our practice from reading this, but I don't know. I kind of, what the general rule is in boards and closed minutes, but those are my thoughts on it.
I was, I could weigh in a little bit. I know when I was on the park board, we did not have audio yet, so it was a few years ago. But there were word for word minutes. And so once a quarter, the park district, and I don't know if they still do this, but how they did it then was we would go into closed session, we would review minutes, and the board secretary kept track of those minutes, and we would look at those and we would say, okay, this particular incident happened 6 years ago, it doesn't need to be held closed anymore, let's just go ahead and release it to the public. We would maybe say this, most of this is benign, but we still have a staff person here that's working for us, we don't want to release this. So things would be struck, but Stephanie's point, it gives historical perspective. Even at our federal government, we release, you know, our president releases information over time. So even if it's 20 years later. So because our minutes are not detailed, and we do need historical perspective, then we keep our audio. You know, I would just say that, you know, the board's going to make a decision, you know, should we release this? You know, and you know, Mr. Elder's lived in Utah for 9 years now, so we could go ahead and at least tease him. But, but that would be what would be some of the conversation that would occur. So,
the comments.
And I wasn't picking on anything.
Oh, I didn't think of it that way. It was a good example, actually. That I guess I've been on the. I think this comes up every year. We look at it, and every year. We kind of question this. And I think the reason that I like to destroy the audio is to err on the side of making sure that through some sort of an administrative mishap, something that was confidential about employees or something doesn't get out. And so I think it's just kind of good housekeeping. As we look at these things, most of them are resolved, and I'm fine with destroying the audio.
Okay. Any thoughts?
I mean, if it's, the issue has been raised is that of a policy issue. Is it something that should go to a policy committee?
Well, we have a policy on it already.
Yeah, we already have.
Policy. We have a policy so that says that every 18 months.
No, I understand, but Stephanie has raised the issue that, you know, we should talk. You know, she has a different interpretation from what my understanding of. Of the policy says, so maybe we need some clarification.
I don't think she's missing. I don't think Stephanie's saying she misinterprets the policy.
No,
she just wants to. She would advocate for a different policy where you're not destroying it. So I don't believe Stephanie's not understanding the current
but
policy.
But to this point, he's saying that exactly we need to go back to policy.
Yeah, and she said exactly right. We have a policy that we're going to vote on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We have a policy in place that we will vote on it. It doesn't say that we have to vote to destroy it. It just says, you're going to vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're kind of doing right now, is we're deciding, do we want to destroy it or not? We're following policy right now.
Okay.
Right.
I just thought it was unclear. To me, I think it's unclear.
I think the policy says we vote on if we're destroying it. It doesn't say you have to destroy it.
It just seems implicit to me.
I would agree with Drew that I think the board is, in general probably thinks, well, this is kind of what we have to do and this is what we do. So that's, I guess that's why we were bringing up that you don't really, to Dean's point, you don't really have to. It doesn't say that you have to. So.
Do you need any clarification in terms of changing the policy? Or
no, I think this is my thought. I mean, what we're doing right now based on this discussion is saying, for instance, the examples that we have in front of us in terms of the audio as are that these are resolved. So to me, this is a good example of destroying the audio. They don't. There's no purpose for keeping it. And so when this does, maybe this is part of what you're thinking about, Drew, when this comes to the table and we talk about it, then it's relevant only to those recordings that we're looking at. It's not wholesale. So we're not making an across the board, we're getting rid of every audio. But Kurt just gave the example of, you look at this piece, and there may be some that we determine we would keep these two, and the board has the ability to make that decision as well.
I'm not comfortable with the cherry-picking kind of philosophy, just because I think, just because it puts us the decision of subjectivity strictly on the board, and we may think they're closed, but in 3 years something pops up and you have these records are open, these records are not, these records are open. Some during a discoverable stage, that could be held against you to say, what made you think that that was closed, but this one is open, right? To me, it's a discovery question, and it's the standard practices of you do it or you don't.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
fair. I was saying you wouldn't destroy it. You would release it. You'd either hold it or you'd release it, but you wouldn't destroy it.
Well, but that and then but my concern would be that some of what's in here as a resolved issue is could be personnel related, could be something that
you could hold it for 30 years then. I mean, at the Park District, I'm sure it's been released now, but there was actually a lady that had worked for the Park District. I don't even remember what it was, but she was like 89 years old, and that was 15 years ago, and still lived in town. And every time it came up, we held it because now that was happened to be that somebody knew that they were still in town, but. But I can give you an example. There were purchases of property that didn't go through, or purchases of businesses that didn't go through, that were eventually just released. And it was, again, it wasn't audio, but it was verbatim, word for word, whatever park commissioner said. And there are people that maybe would like to look at it and say, one of the places that was looked at was Center Ice. There could be people that would say, huh, interesting, the park district looked at, 18 years ago buying Center Ice. Didn't know that, So
I guess I don't know what the value of that.
What's the motion?
For someone that doesn't care about history, then you would see no value in it.
Well, I didn't say I don't care about history. don't put words in my mouth. I'm saying like that example to me.
But it could be. Well, okay, maybe it's. Yeah. I don't think it's a bad example. What happens if you're on the park board and Center Ice now approaches you again and you can go back and see what was the thought process?
Well, I think you would have files for that too. But I hear what you're saying.
So. Oh, well, I'm an idiot. So
no, you're not.
It doesn't matter. So
I've
been called worse.
The motion. I didn't change. I didn't change.
No,
no,
you
have not
destroyed.
Look at the policy and see if the policy should be changed for various reasons. And if this has been pattern in practice, doesn't mean you shouldn't look at your policy to see.
No, that's right.
But tonight we have a vote that's based on the policy that's here.
Right.
And I'm prepared to take it away.
All right.
With the recommendation that it goes back to policy for review?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. What you said. He said that you can do that, but we have a motion in front of us.
In front of us that we have to resolve.
Call to a vote.
Yeah, you can call it.
Call the vote. Okay. So, I'm ready.
Wait.
So, and what? Let's be clear what we're voting on.
Thank you, Patty.
Yes, discretion of closed meeting audios as identified in our superintendent recommendation. We all have that in front of us. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Buckle.
No.
No.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Mill?
Yes. All right. May I have a motion to adjourn the regular meeting?
Second.
Mr. Bochinski, Mr. Elger.
Yep.
11:45 p.m.
All in favor?
Thank you.
All in favor.